They know.
The challenge is, Mr. Al Gopal, who is an independent agricultural analyst, has requested that we prioritize him or give him a space to speak before the other speakers from Baywatch. And because we've already heard someone from Baywatch, we will indulge him. So, with that, I would like to invite Mr. Gopal to do it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much for the very nice lunch. I enjoyed a big plateful of GM maize, and I hope that all of you who saw that maize on your plates, it was GM, I can tell you, I tested it, it tasted good, and I feel very good. Mr. Chair, thank you for paying for that lunch. I'll send you a bag of millionaire in return. Mr. Chair, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Hans Lombard. I'm an independent agricultural analyst with 35 years experience in the field of agriculture, internationally, locally, worldwide. My topic is GM food is safer than water. Safety issues concerning humans and the environment attributed to GMOs are the subject of this public hearing under the auspices of the Portfolio Committee on Environmental Affairs and Tourism. And as the chair pointed out this morning, this committee is keen to hear both sides. My arguments are based on the activists, the anti-GMOs versus science. We often hear that tests done by multinational seed companies are not reliable. Mr. Chair, I have never seen a document or any research done by any seed company. I believe there are 8 seed companies that are providing GMO seed in South Africa and worldwide. I have never seen one of their documents. I have never seen any research that they have done. My research is based simply on the scientific fraternity worldwide. And this is no new subject. The anti-GMO activists like BioWatch, SafeAge, Greenpeace have for the past 12 years raised the same issue year after year of the so-called risks and dangers to human health, animals and the environment supposedly threatened by GMOs. The latest, the most outrageous claim was a BioWatch report in the Sunday Argus of March the 18th, 2007, this year, claiming South Africa's GM maize crop is linked to cancer. Mr. Chair, can you absolutely believe this rubbish that people can go out and put out a statement like that, that 40 million people in South Africa would depend on maize as their staple crop are threatened by cancer? Can you believe it? This is what they put out in the media. But like all the statements they make like this, it boomeranged and it was unfounded. Just to show how ignorant the activists are, this report about maize being linked to cancer was linked to a maize event, MON863. This maize is not grown in South Africa, it is not commercially produced in South Africa, it's not available here. It's a maize crop that is resistant to rootworm, and it's only available in Europe and in 7 other countries. Now, it became a hot topic in Europe, where it has been approved for importation as food and feed since 2004. The maize had been subjected to a 90-day rat study in 2003. After a comprehensive risk assessment, EFSA, the European Food Safety Authority, in 2004 concluded that MON863 is unlikely to have any adverse effects on human, animal health or the environment. In March 2007, this year, Greenpeace is an activist organization in Europe, hired Professor Giles Seralini of the Krigen Group Committee of Independent Research in France to reassess the 2003 rat study, not to make a new study as is claimed by Greenpeace, who said he has now made a new study. He reassessed the 2003 study. He claimed there were alarming signs of toxicity and liver damage. Greenpeace went berserk and issued a press release worldwide to this effect. However, 3 weeks ago, EFSA's panel of scientists again reassessed the 2003 rat study, reassessed Seralini's study, and emphatically rejected Sierra Leone's claim as rubbish, as it does not raise any new safety concerns in addition to the original opinion in April 2004. The German Federal Institute, two other authorities apart from EFSA, the German Federal Institute for Risk Assessment and the French Sanitary and Food Safety Agency fully endorsed EFSA's opinion, and MON 863 is being happily consumed by humans and animals in the EU. It's not been banned, it's not being stopped. Greenpeace and BioWatch have yet to apologize to the public for grossly misleading them with such ghastly, fear-mongering humbug. My presentation says GM food is safer than water. Mr. Chairman, not quite true. If you drink too much water, you will drown. In one of the presentations from the African Center for Biosafety, they referred to cotton on the Makatini flats where farmers have suffered losses and financial debts. Now, I only got this information when I read through the documents this morning, and I had to find some statement which is not included in my presentation, but which I will ask the Secretary to distribute to the members. BioWatch claimed that these farmers had 18 million debt to the land bank as a result of GM cotton, that they were not enjoying extra yields. And to challenge them, shortly after that statement, 27 chairpersons of cotton farming associations on the Makatini flats, representing 1,680 smallholder farmers, challenged BioWatch to meet them face to face to substantiate their alleged facts. They are still waiting for BioWatch to pitch up. The report was published in Nature Biotechnology 2004. According to the report, 2,223 individual farmers were interviewed, and they referred to a study that was done by the University of Pretoria and the University of Reading in the United Kingdom, in which it was concluded that farmers on the Makatini flats increased their yields by 30% and reduced pesticide spraying by 10 times. Now, it is really interesting. The question is, does BioWatch really understand the economics of farming? Why? Because of the Makatini flats. The whole agricultural sector is in debt. Commercial farmers in South Africa, Mr. Chair, owe the banks 50 billion rand. BioWatch claims these poor farmers in Makatini owe the bank 18 million. And this went up from 29 million the previous year. One bank reduced 500 million credit to commercial farmers in South Africa because of the problems they are in agriculture. But BioWatch never apologized. In the Goodyear's Agricultural Paprika Corporation in the Northern Cape, for example, involving 55 emerging farmers, went bankrupt. They owed the land bank 49 million rand. Why pick on Makatini? The reason was they deliberately tried to seek out an area where emerging farmers were making money to discredit them. Mr. Chair, none of the activists from Greenpeace, BioWatch, Safe Age, etc., and this is interesting, none of them are scientists, agriculturalists, agronomists, or nutritionists, and therefore they are not qualified to tell farmers what to plant and people what to eat, nor to express an opinion about environmental matters. As one emerging farmer told me on the Makatini flats, they come here, they drive BMWs and Mercedes, eat three meals a day, and tell us we mustn't plant GM food. Why is it that the South African Medical Council, the CSIR, the Department of Science and Technology, the Agricultural Research Council, and Agri SA, NAFU, National African Farmers Union, farming cooperatives who market GM food have never raised questions over GMO risks, dangers, and environmental contamination. This brings me to the question of the honorable member sitting over there, the bright lady who's enjoyed this afternoon's presentation, when she asked the question, is there any presenter who can provide concrete evidence of the risks of GMOs? The answer is no, Mr. Chair. There isn't anyone in this audience. There isn't anyone anywhere in the world. The lady also raised the question about the man in Canada who addressed your committee 10 years ago about pollution, and she asked the question 10 years ago, what has happened to the pollution? Well, nothing has happened. The man, Mr. Percy Smyser, was a farmer in Canada who stole the seeds and planted it. The Supreme Court of Canada found him guilty of stealing Monsanto's seed. The false fears raised by activists over GM food during the past 12 years have not provided a shred of substantiated scientific or medical evidence of adverse effects to humans, animals, or the environment anywhere. The fear-mongering opinions must be weighed up against the findings of the world's leading scientists, academies of science and medicines, such as, to quote a few, again, in your one of your presentations, the question is raised, very little safety data exists. However, none scientifically or medical substantiated data of adverse effects exists. Professor Klaus Aumann, the emeritus of the University of Bern, Switzerland, and guest professor of Delft University of Technology in the Netherlands, is an independent scientist who was a member of a panel of 11 scientists in 2001 who examined the safety of GM crops on behalf of the Flanders Institute for Biotechnology and Autonomous Biotech Research Institute based in Belgium. We unanimously came to the conclusion that GM crops currently on the market are as safe as their conventional counterparts. Furthermore, to date, to the best of my knowledge, there have been no scientifically substantiated reports of negative reactions to human or animal health anywhere in the world. Attachment B to my presentation, and it'll be worth your while to read that carefully. Professor Jennifer Thompson, our own molecular professor here in South Africa from the University of Cape Town, also an independent scientist who together with several others was a member of the Sargeen Committee in 1990 that set up the guidelines for GMO use in this country before the GMO Act was passed in Parliament. Professor Thompson is a recipient of the L'Oreal United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, UNESCO. She was awarded as the most outstanding woman scientist in Africa for her work on genetic engineering. And the research that she has done over the past 15 years says, to date there is no peer-reviewed, substantiated scientific evidence whatsoever available anywhere in the world to prove that GM food poses a health risk to man or animals, or that it could contaminate the environment, nor of any negative reactions to human health anywhere in the world. As a result of GM food, you can also see her details in my attachment C. Now, in the submission from Safe Age, they raise a question again, how ignorant these people are goes beyond common sense of the Advertising Standards Authority, who forced Monsanto to withdraw an advert. I'm not a spokesperson for Monsanto. When I read this article, I phoned the ASA, Advertising Standards Authority, and said, how come, what was the problem? Now, somebody complained The advert was placed in a consumer magazine, a family magazine, read by 3 million people. And the advert said, no negative reactions to genetically modified foods have been reported. The gentleman who complained was not a consumer, he was an activist. One person out of 3 million readers wrote and said that statement was not correct. It was misleading and false. What Monsanto had omitted to include in that advert was no scientifically or medically substantiated reactions have been reported. And the Advertising Standard Authority has accepted that wording and passed the advert now, and our friends, the activists, don't know that. Professor C.S. Prakash, an eminent American research scientist at the Tuskegee University in the USA, says, GM food is safer than water. Let's have a drink. It's safer than water, less dangerous than stairs, bicycles or medicine. More than 2 billion people have eaten genetically modified food in the first 5 years of being produced commercially. 7 National Academies of Science have endorsed this approach, and 16 Nobel laureates, along with 3,200 scientists, support this view. The Royal Society of London, which is respected as probably the most eminent scientific organization in the world, researched GMO crops and came to the conclusion there is no consensus as to the seriousness or even existence of any potential harm from GM technology. Biotech crops might even be safer than regular food. This was endorsed by the following 8 academies of science: Brazil, China, India, Mexico, excuse me, the Third World Academy, the National Academy of Science of the USA, Germany, and France. The British Medical Association conducted their own research. There is very little potential for GM foods to cause harmful health effects. Any of the concerns expressed apply with equal vigor to conventionally derived foods. GM foods have enormous potential to benefit both developing and developed world. The European Union instructed the European Commission to do research. They funded 81 scientific research projects on GMOs over a period of 15 years, costing 460 million rand, and came to the conclusion that GM food is both safe for humans and the environment. Now, we heard this morning that no long-term study has been done. Mr. Chair, in any study, 15 years, how much longer do you want to go? How much more can science produce in 15 years? That was 15 years they did it. Since then, GM food has been on the market for 12 years. So we have 27 years of genetically modified food and crops. How much longer do you want to conduct your studies? With this concrete and scientifically undisputed proof of the safety of GM food, and the fact that it does not differ from the conventional, the question of labeling or a precautionary stand becomes irrelevant. You know, there's no labeling in America, and we hear that all the food in Europe is labeled. They insist on labeling. Mr. Chair, 10 million people fly to America from Europe every year. They sit in the restaurants. I was there year after year with them. They get the menu. They never ask for a labeled menu. They come from Europe. They don't say, is your hamburger that I'm eating, is the meat labeled, where does it come from? They eat it, they chew it. I went to numerous shops in London 2 years ago, food shops. I said to the floor lady, the manager, I want to buy some labeled sweet corn. She said, you know, there's a whole shelf full of sweet corn that comes from America. I don't know what the label is. The fact that there's no label on it. And the shop in London told me that to label food, it would cost the consumer 20% extra. Now, do you want our mealy-meal that we sell to the kids in the rural areas to pay 20 cents more for a pound of mealy-meal? Despite the activist fear-mongering campaign, GM production worldwide is expanding at an unprecedented rate. Last year, South Africa planted 1.4 million hectares of GM crops. That was 180% over the previous year, with 44% of our maize is GM. This year will be 50%. According to the sales of GM seed, this year we will produce 50% GM. Cotton is 92% GM. Soya is 75%. Our margarine that we eat, our salad dressing that we eat, comes from soya. Soya is included in 7,000 ingredients in the food. The European Union imports 70 million tons of soya from America and Argentina. It's not labeled. It goes into their salad dressing. It goes into their margarine. In London and in the UK alone, they eat a ton of margarine a week. Comes from soya. Two extra countries in Europe, six last year, have adopted GM this year. The most significant expansion is in France, where GM plants increased from 5,000 hectares last year to 30,000 hectares this year. The activists are driving their anti-GM campaign on false emotional grounds to enrich themselves, with no patriotic concerns for our country. They are financed from outside sources to line their pockets. In 2005, BioWatch received donations in excess of 2.2 million rand from the Gaia Foundation, London, EFOS in the Netherlands, and Heinrich Bull in Germany. Nearly 1.2 million went to galleries. Isn't it a nice way to earn a living, to tell people they're going to die if they eat the poor farmer's maize when they get the money from outside? It's a lovely way to make money, Mr. Chair. I think it's not as hard work as a member of parliament. That money that they got, that 2.2 million rand, could buy enough maize to feed more than 18,000 starving children in sub-Saharan Africa for 1 year. Despite this convincing, undeniable, substantiated scientific evidence confirming the safety of GM crops and dissolving it from all risks, activists can seemingly not interpret scientific data and continue to raise fear-mongering myths such as GMOs will contaminate the environment, become invasive, and develop super weeds. One of the main advantages from GM crops, specifically cotton and maize, with a built-in toxin targeting specific pests like the maize stalk borer and the cotton bollworm, is that conventional spraying of pesticides is considerably reduced, benefiting harmless insects like ladybirds, spiders, moths, and many more. Somebody mentioned this morning that the monarch moth that died in America as a result of GM accepted rubbish. Scientists have established that no moth has died from GM crops. According to the United States National Center for Food and Agriculture Policy, in the 5 years after introducing of GM crops, 8 biotech crops grown in the United States increased crop yields by 2 million tons and saved growers $1.5 billion by reducing pesticide use by 23,000 tons. This is the advantage of GM crops, that you reduce pesticide sprays. The Canola Council of Canada reported a reduction of 6 million tons of herbicide product. The Chinese Academy of Science reported cotton farmers reduced pesticide applications by 70%, the equivalent of 78,000 tons less poison grain into the environment. In South Africa, GM cotton farmers have reduced pesticide sprays from 10 times to twice. Maize farmers have eliminated heavy aerial sprays, which could sometimes drift up to 8 kilometers, killing all harmful insects over a wide area. To date, no conventional or GM crop has shown any tendency to invade the environment. Neither can a BT crop become a super weed. After 12 years of GM crops, we have not seen a single super weed. Now, you all know weeds. Anybody who knows anything about farming will know weeds proliferate. They grow faster than any crop. They spread all over the place. But funnily enough, we've not seen a super weed anywhere in the world. I'd like to see a photograph. Activists will tell you that rat studies done by Dr. Arpad Kutsai in Scotland in 1998 and the Russian scientist Dr. Irina Kamakova in 2005 showed damaging effects that could have the same results in humans. Kutsai's study was with ordinary potatoes, not a GM potato. He took an ordinary potato and injected it with a lectin and some other substance. It was not a GM potato. They were never intended as a food crop for human, according to the Lancet, the very prestigious scientific journal in the UK. The Royal Society of London again conducted a thorough peer review of all Kutsai's data and concluded these experiments were badly designed, poorly carried out, and inaccurately interpreted, and that no conclusions could be drawn from them. They were flawed. Kutsai was fired from the Scottish Scientific Institute where he was working for lying to the public. No other scientist has ever replicated his study. Emma Kopa in Russia did her experiments with mice and fed them GM soybeans and claimed they died. Her study was never peer-reviewed. The British Advisory Committee on Novel Foods and Processes, responsible for GMO safety evaluation in Great Britain, analyzed Ermakova's experiments and reported that the finding lacks detail essential to meaningful assessment of the results. The results were not quality controlled through the normal peer review process preceding scientific publication. The study was likewise flawed. Nobody has repeated it, but Mr. Chair, what is interesting to analyze is that all these activists keep on referring us to tests that were done on rats, GMA. They died, they suffered. Why rats? You know, in America, 280 million people eat GM food every day for the last 12 years. In South Africa, 40 million people, one way or another, not rats, I don't know if rats have eaten them, but 40 million people have been eating one way or another GM food. We have had not anybody complaining of a tummy ache or a sore throat. So forget about the rats. The humans have consumed GM food, and South Africa is the best example where more people eat GM food made, which is a staple crop, than anywhere else in the world. You will also be told that farmers cannot save GM seed. We heard this young lady. There is no law in South Africa stopping a farmer from planting saved seed on his own farm, whether it's GMO or not GMO. According to the South African National Seed Organization, SAMSOR, 80% of all soya seed and 70% of wheat seed is farm saved seed. The seed companies are complaining because farmers save their seed. Yeah, SAMSOR gives us the figures. So who tells you you cannot save seed? Rubbish. Planting saved seed is an outdated practice in modern agriculture. Replanted seed loses its hybrid vigor, leading to yield reductions of up to 30%. Mr. Chair, Africa produces the lowest rate of maize in the world, 1.4 tons, compared to an average of 4 tons up to 10 tons just down the border here in South Africa. Why? Because of saved seed. Now, in your submission there, you'll find that SafeAid has produced a few paragraphs that says how dangerous GM crops are. That pigs in the USA suffered and died from eating GM crops, and that dairy cows in Germany died from eating GM crops. Here, this was on a farm. The pigs were on one farm in America, and the dairy cows were on one farm in Germany. Millions of pigs all over the world are fed GM feed. In South Africa, all our feedlots use genetically modified grain to feed their cattle. Why is it that cattle only died on one farm in Germany, nobody else in the world, and pigs only on one farm in America, nobody else in the world? And what are the scientific facts? The problem with the pigs was pseudo pregnancies. This has nothing to do with feeding the pigs BT maize, says Dr. Jerome Baker, the chief executive of the Federation of Animal Science Societies in the USA. Scientists from the Iowa State University, i.e. Professor John Carr, veterinary medicine and assistant professor of diagnostic production animal medicine, Professor Thomas Garson, veterinary medicine, and Professor Gary Munkow, professor of plant pathology, visited the five farms in question, the five pig farms, and concluded that there was no link between the pseudo pregnancy productive problem and the feeding of BT maize. As far as the death of the dairy cows in Germany are concerned, several scientific institutions in Germany strongly deny that any cows have ever died in Germany from GM maize. The veterinary pathology department of the University of Gießen, the Institute of Animal Nutrition and the Federal Research Institute for Agriculture, and the Robert Koch Institute, which reported, there is no reason to suspect that BT maize caused the death of dairy cows. The Union of German Academies of Science reported that food from GMOs is more healthy than that from conventional maize. Feeding trials with thousands of animals have proved GM products harmless. The health and productivity of animals was not impaired after being fed GM fodder. These are the scientific data which anybody can research. Yet, in the documentation, the presentations that were presented to your committee this morning, Mr. Chair, they make these false claims. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, could I invite a response to questions?
Yes, Jefferson. Yeah, you use a very appropriate epithet.
Very described as wombat conditions compatible.
It's very elevated. But then I just want to find out, is it true that the honorable Malinetti's paradigm, comma A, comma B. Comma A is in the traditional comma, is in the traditional seeds. Then he gets converted to GMO, right? And then he buys it. Then he plants it from whoever will sell or whatever. And then what happens when, after he reaps and then he wants to replant, what happens to his soil? Because you see, our concern is environment. We want to know what happens to the soil. Well, some people are using a very strong weather condition. Now, I'm just want to know what happened to that soil of former A, right? Then, is it free now to convert, to revert to the traditional seed the following year? Or better still, let's say he does crop rotation. If he breaks his farm into four parts, potatoes here, maize there, you know, and says one portion, I'm going to try the GMO seeds. And then next door, another portion, whatever. And then after, to see how they can compete, even if they be the same crops. And what happens then if he wants to vary, to say, like, where I planted GMO, I want to do traditional seed, etc. I want a crisp, because to me that's the most practical example of marketing the GMO, or saying GMOs even the bit of marketed, but they're actually dangerous to the soil. I want a crisp example. That's point one. Point two, is there any such situation in the world?
where this type of experimental farming model was engineered, because that would add credibility to GMO, that would be harmless. You can do what you want to do and then nothing will happen. Or can you, are you going to say, no, once you are use GMOs, you're stuck with them. You can never revert to what you call it, to traditional seed. I want a crisp answer to that.
Any other questions? Members of the Batalia, Marshall?
Is there any danger that people contaminate and destroy organic food? The second question is, comment on the paper's testing report on two varieties of comment on the status of safety reports on two varieties of maize, 1A53 and NK03. And this question I posed to the department earlier. Will you comment on the nutritional value of organically grown food and GM food? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Lamar, yeah, I'm just interested in your statement that you felt that labeling is irrelevant. Now, the regulations are South African regulation, that health regulation, in fact, it is appropriate to have a certain amount to label GMO foods. If they are, if they are considered to be in any way a risk to the general public, I come from a family where they've got a lot of allergic members, and one of the regulations is that that it must be mandatory label if it does contain a likely allergen. Are you saying all that should be scrapped?
Thank you, Chair. My concern is one, and it has to do with labeling. I think it is important that people should have a choice. And a choice is based on information provided. So if you deny me that right of making that choice, some people might prefer to go and buy a loaf of bread which is produced, a mass production type of thing, and some people might choose to produce their own bread in their own little kitchen. Choice. Now, if you are going to say that it is going to be too expensive to have a label to tell me exactly, to just inform me as to what is it that I'm eating, just as much as I would invite you to my home state. I'm Tsonga speaking. There are various types of foods that we eat. And I deny you the right to know exactly what it is that we eat, and I say, eat it because I'm eating it. Would you do so? Thank you.
No, you have to ask me to speak eloquent English.
I was beginning to worry because the A and the I have been quiet one morning. And I was beginning to wonder whether the A in the policy conference of the ANC about monopoly capital is true. I was beginning to think that maybe you guys are beholden to monopoly interest, but now that I see your hands, maybe I'm here to review my opinion.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I mean, you're right, I have been holding back this morning. One of the reasons why I have is that I've sat in a number of the public hearings around GMO, and what I'm seeing happening yesterday is precisely what happens all the time. You have the anti-GMO activists put their case forward, you have the pro-GMO activists put their case forward, parliamentarians kind of walk away feeling even more confused. They don't know where the science is. As you're saying, you know, you're saying that activists aren't scientists, well, MPs aren't scientists either. We've got to be able to sift our way through these different views being pushed forward and see what is the most logical way forward and what is the best, what is in the public's interest in terms of going forward with the controversial subject like GMOs. I do however need to take issue with some of the presentations that you put forward, such as the one around Percy Smyser. I feel that, I mean, you were saying a certain inaccuracy that put forward. I also feel that you put forward a certain inaccuracy around that. I was here when he came to present, in fact, to Parliament. That was about 4 years ago. And the central issue around that issue was not that he stole the seed for that. And we could debate this later, but what he was contending was that, in fact, he never wanted to plant GM seeds in the first place. And that those seeds came into his farm, they got blown off the trucks, or the trucks that were passing through, and suddenly these seeds found their way into the farm. And now Monsanto came onto his farm and said, you're growing GM crops, therefore we're going to fine you for that. Okay, we can debate those things, but that's the central crux of that issue. The question is in South Africa as well, are we protecting our farmers from that? If people choose to grow organically, are they free from GMO contamination? I think it's an important issue for us to look at as well. Can people make the choice? Because I really think that the issue around GMOs is about choice. I understand you saying that, you know, there's 40 million South Africans eating GMOs and no one's complaining about stomach aches. Well, I had a stomach ache over the weekend. I don't know whether that was GMO or that was just from eating normal food. But the fact is that we don't know. Okay, I heard a radio debate today where people were saying sugar, a certain amount of sugar is good for you. Other people saying sugar is really bad for you. These are the choices that we need to make over our own food. As consumers, we have the right to choose what we want to eat. And our health is our own business. And I think that putting forward a debate saying that, you know, GM food, all we're looking for is labeling. We want to know what we're eating and we want to make the choice. I don't think that that's a very unfair thing to ask. In terms of the kind of salaries around activists, well, I don't even want to start to question the kind of profits that are made by GMO companies in this country as well. And let's just face the fact that everyone is pushing a certain agenda. And everyone is getting money from somewhere to push a certain agenda. Okay, so we don't need to cast aspersions on people's right to push a certain advocacy line. And I think it's important that we make that point too. If I look at the amount of money that is spent on kind of pro-GMO advertising as opposed to anti-GMO, I'm sure it's going to come out in terms of the pro side. Okay, so let's not create aspersions around that. I think so. In the last resort, though, it's also, you know, there's also a little bit of a paradox that I always seem to be presented with on GMOs. On the one side, GMO people seem to claim that there's a substantial equivalent, but there's not much difference in a kind of GMO food, and that, you know, there's not much difference in terms of other food, and that doesn't have the kind of health effect. And therefore, we shouldn't be labeling, because in fact, it's, you know, it's in everything, and it's fine, we should keep it. But then why, on the other hand, is it that you're arguing in terms of the patent law that there is a substantial difference between a GMO seed and another seed? Why are you claiming that this could now be patented as a novel seed? Okay, and you're claiming different from that side, but you're not claiming different when it comes to labeling. And I know that's something that I'd like you to clear up as well in terms of that. Thank you. But ultimately, I'm also asking for sanity here. I'm asking for choice, and I'm asking for people to be able to make up their own minds on this. But to do that, they need to be provided with the information, they need to be provided with labeling, and they need to be provided with the protection in terms of biodiversity and in terms of being able to prevent their own crop from contamination too. Thank you.
Thank you, I also feel that while the Roman Church is celebrating the fact that we are eating GMOs without knowledge. I think that's a very, very fundamentalist approach. Really, that you do something and you impose it on people. Because you dominate the market, there's no other thing. Whether you go to Checkers or Cookie, all the farmers have already produced this food, there's no choice. It's a very unmodern approach. The more deeper level to take that decision on behalf of others. Strike me. So I would really think it's a very profound level. It's a very general way of smack the fundamentalist approach. We all know you've got to go for that. I would like to ask some questions. One, coincidentally, the next year, from Sam Jeffrey Smith, wrote a book called Seeds of Depression. And he made quite a number of claims. Yeah? He was trying to dispute some of those things. One of them is that rare tomatoes, GMO tomatoes, develop stomach illness. He goes on to say that a UK government found that demonstrated that rare fat is genetic GM potatoes develop potentially pre-cancerous cell growth and damage immune system. Rare fat generally is a problem with blood cell, kidney, and liver formation. My friend, GM soya, had problems with liver cell formation, etc. I mean, they're all good things. And he references them to very reputable, what would appear to be reputable genera. So, I think one conclusion that one can draw on this is that there is a scientific issue, not the scientific issue of danger of GM products or reputable. Now, in the light of this history, don't you think that they should be labeled? Do you want to assume this place of a god on our behalf, that you decide and you will have to submit ourselves to a decision? You want to assume that god is a god. That's the one. So we also not look at this issue of what some people call a precautionary principle. What's your view on this? You think this is waste of time, etc. Do you think that the market should solve this thing? We ask this question in there, but I would like to hear you for your religious personality around this question. You know. So the market decides whether all of South Africa is GMO based. Is that really correct? Do you really truly believe that if there's a market demand, we should wipe up every other organic form of agriculture, every other traditional form, must dispense all, put everything in the museum, and say that from now on, it's GMO because the market tells us so. So, what about biodiversity threats? People have mentioned that there's a problem of threats with our of biodiversity. Because we cannot control this. This can be moved by air, it can be moved by anything. Is that not the problem? What's your view on our point? What about those who choose to be organic farmers? They again, that question was asked. Should they succumb? What protection do you give them? Those who don't want to go in the woods. I think that's unfortunate loser, unfortunate aircraft types were all moving to the 21st century, and the 21st century is GMO. So we're not disturbing them. So, yeah, those are the kind of questions I would like to comment.
Mr. Chair, the question about moving crops around, once you've planted GMOs, you can't plant another crop on that field, is not true. You can plant anything, any other crop on any soil that you've planted a GMO the previous year or the last 10 years. If you want to plant rice there, or you want to plant beans or potatoes or cotton, if you planted maize, a GMO maize, you can plant anything, it does nothing to the soil whatsoever. The question of farmer A and B, I think, was he referring to the question that this gentleman asked this morning, farmer A plants GMO and farmer B plants non-GMO, how do you solve the problem there? It's not a problem. For thousands of years, people have been planting, especially maize, that cross-pollinates. I mean, maize cannot cross-pollinate with cotton, and cotton cannot cross-pollinate with soya. Those are the three main crops that we are talking about. Now, maize farmers, it's known for a fact that farmers live next to one another. A single fence divides the two farms. The one farmer on this side of the fence plants white maize, and the farmer on the other side of the fence plants yellow maize. Now there is a problem. If that yellow maize, which is non-GMO, can contaminate white maize, if the farmer takes that maize to the co-op, his price is reduced by 50 rand a ton. It's downgraded if he's got yellow kernels in it. So farmers have learned to manage this problem. They don't take one another to court. They know to plant their maize 150 meters apart, and they cannot cross-pollinate. So this is, it's not a problem that has arisen since the advent of GMOs. And the same here, the question is of, what about the organic farmer? Now, there is no organic cotton produced in South Africa. There's no organic maize produced in South Africa. Mainly the organic food stuff is vegetables. Now there's no way that the farmer who plants GMO maize or GMO cotton on the other side of the fence can influence the farmer on the other side of the fence who's planting organic food. Nothing wrong with organic food if anybody wants to plant it. Labeling, well, we've had a lot of discussions on labeling.
It's a question. Is there a need for it? I mean,
okay, something in that
direction. I wanted to find out, this is what I was on my AB. The essence of my question is, if I as a farmer have been a traditional seeds, but I say, let me try my experiment with GMO. I take my whole farm and plant sweet corn. Using GMOs. And after a year, I reap. So the farm is clean now, I reap. The following year, I say, gee, let me revert to traditional. Can I do that on the same soil of my farm? That is the essence of my question. Or am I stuck?
No problem. The question of choice information. Do we know when we go into a supermarket where the food comes from that we buy? Do we know? Do we know what goes into the baby's food? Do we know where that's produced? Has anybody ever questioned the food that you buy off a shelf, a baby food? Has anybody ever questioned where does it come from? Why is there suddenly the issue raised because it's GMO? I now want to have a choice. The government's decided, America has decided they don't need labeling. Israel has decided they don't need labeling. South Africa has decided after the Departments of Health, Agricultural Research Council.
They've all gone into this and decided that labeling is not really necessary.
The question is that the chair raised, the precautionary approach. You take a precaution before you get into an aeroplane because you don't know if it's going to fall down, but you fly in it. So the precautionary issue has become a political issue with genetically modified and the risk of precaution. There's a precaution walking across the street. You take a precaution to look at the traffic light. Can you walk over? But thousands of us don't look at the traffic light, we walk through the car. So precaution, yes, you take precaution. The precautionary attitude, it has been tested. I mentioned the tests that have been done scientifically on GMAs. So to go against the scientific analysis and findings, to say that there must now be another precautionary need. The scientific fraternity has not identified a precautionary approach to GM food. And the chair mentioned their scientific disputes. I beg to differ there. There is no scientific dispute over GM food. There is no scientist in the world that has identified and said, this is a problem, there is a risk to this product. There isn't. So there is no scientific dispute. The question of Jeffrey Smith's book. That book that Jeffrey Smith has written, not a single item in that book is scientifically substantiated. No scientist supports Jeffrey Smith's findings in his book, none. It's a good emotional story. He's learned how to make money. He's just produced another book. Gee, you can read the other book. He just produced it. There is no scientific substantiated evidence in that book that supports his claims. It's biodiversity seed moved by air. I don't know how seed can move by air. Pollen can. And there is management in maize production where cross-pollination can take place to overcome that. And there is no need if the market demands, if farmers demand, farmers have a free choice to buy or not to buy GM food, the GM seed. And because of the advantages, the built-in advantages that it has against the store border, against various other diseases, that is a choice the farmer has.
Let me just ask one thing, the quite a critical point. Maybe the state is so that I can get to Chris to answer. You wouldn't mind if all of South African agriculture is here?
No, I wouldn't mind if that's a choice of the farmers. Because eventually, it could benefit them. A farmer saves 400 rand a hectare on pesticides by planting GM.
If we lose all other indigenous knowledge, all the accumulated experience of the farm, all of those, you wouldn't mind all of them.
Well, that again is market forces and it's people's choice. It's unlikely that it will happen, but if all the farmers in South Africa decide to plant GM, that would be their choice. I don't think anybody can stop them.
Maybe before you do, you just mentioned something very key. You said the farmers have a choice whether to plant GM or not. And that choice is based on information. It's not just blind choice. Now, why would you want to deny me the same right to make a choice whether I want to eat this or that? I also asked you a question which you didn't respond to. If I took you to my home state, which is Tonga, and there are certain foods that we eat, something greenish, very slimy, very foreign to you, you don't know anything about it, would you really just consume it without actually trying to find out from me exactly what this slimy stuff is about? Would you really just simply take it and consume it without actually saying, hey Manulete, I see you're really having it filled with this stuff. But what is this stuff? I mean, to me, it's some form of giving you information so that you can make a choice whether you want to eat it or you decide it.
Mr. Chair, I was in Ghana once upon a time and I was invited to a dinner where President Nkrumah was present and I had the opportunity of sitting opposite the table from where he was sitting. And the national dish in Ghana is yams, and I couldn't understand this funny white stuff. And you normally eat it with your hand, but all the guests around the table were looking to see what the President was doing. And when he started eating the yams with his hands, they all did. And when he asked me why, he says, don't you like to enjoy the Ghana food? I said, Mr. President, I'm sorry, I don't know what this is. I haven't eaten it. I will pass it by. So if somebody puts a plate in front of me of soup, I don't eat it. If I go to your house and you offer me tea or coffee, I say, thank you very much. I've never tasted tea or coffee. So if I go to your house and you put a plate in front of me of something I don't understand, I'm not going to ask you what have you prepared. I would say thank you. I'm not going to have this help you.
I think what we're going to remember is saying it's wrong, but you would also want to have the choice that the society can.
Yes!
You would also want, therefore, food to be labeled so that you can choose whether to eat it or not. To exercise the choice that you could not afford to do. You want to say something?
Yes, thank you, Pai San. Just as you have said previously, I represent Monsanto as one of the industry role players here. So what is very important to know, we will know market forces will determine exactly how much GMO products will be sold in South Africa. But what is very important is that we will only sell the product where it will add value. We know in certain places in South Africa they don't have problems with wheat, so we know we won't sell the Roundup Ready technology to those farmers where it will not contribute the value. Also, the permit requirements as given by the Department of Environmental Affairs, we can only have a certain percentage of GMOs grown in South Africa. If you look at maize, we have to plant like 20% refuge area, so that 20% is in conventional maize. The 20% we have to plant as a refuge requirement, so that is to help us assist to prevent resistance built up against this technology. So that is on one side. So we will not see in South Africa that we'll have 100% of the maize grown as GMO products. So we will not get to that level, and we agree with the department for obvious reasons of protection of the technology and also for resistance management. We will not go to the total acreage of 100%. On the other issue of farm safe seed, as our friend over there said, in South Africa, as you have heard from the Samsung figures, about 80% of the soya and 75% of the wheat is currently farm safe. So those seeds are being kept back, some of them, especially the soybeans, containing the Monsanto technology. And we allow those farmers to make use of those technologies because soybean and wheat are open or self-pollinated crops, so you can farm safe your seed, and the next crop will give you exactly the same yield as the original seed that you purchased. So it gives a benefit there to the farmer, and it's also a law within South Africa. The difference with the patent and why we patent certain products, we don't patent soybeans per se, or the soybean germplasm. What we patent is the technology, and there we ask a specific technology fee. The nutritional value between a conventional variety and the so-called GMO variety is the same. So we don't differentiate between the nutritional value or the compositional value. What we differentiate between is the technology has been added to the one product and the other product doesn't contain the technology. So that is the big difference there, whereby we can patent a specific technology. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Your name?
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having combating. Thank you.
Can I just respond to one sentence? It's around that issue, because I think it is an important issue around the seed. You're saying that you're patenting the technology, not the actual seed. But are you not patenting that seed with the technology in it? I mean, is that not what you are patenting in terms of that? And so when you sell the seed to farmers, patented seed. I mean, that's essentially what you have then claimed to have created, and you're saying that that's substantially different from another soybean seed. Is that not right? In South Africa, Monsanto has licensed various companies. Monsanto has the Tekel brand, there's other seed suppliers, Panar, also various other companies, Pioneer, Afri Seed, Link Seed, that also license our technology, and their germplasm belongs to themselves. So we only give them the technology, and therefore, as I've said, we patent the technology, not the germplasm. Germplasm, you have to register with the plant breeders right in South Africa. Maize, soybean, wheat, all those things, you go through a procedure together with the Agricultural Research Council. They do a lot of trials, and then you register your variety for hybrid to sell it in South Africa.
Thank you very much. Could you then invite
Ngiyabonga ngesikhathi esizayo ukuthola leli thuba. Ukukhuluma yokuthenga le mali. Ngiqhamuka emakhathini flat. Ngaphansi kwenhlangano emakhathini Agriculture Development Forum.
I take this opportunity, Chair. My name is Beatrice Rimane. I come from Makatini Place, from the organization called Makatini Agricultural Development Forum.
In the Hamba Notes of Dritula, Namunda Babus Matenja, Namustin Khalid.
I am with my sister here, normally Nelo Matenga, as long as well as Mr. Khalid.
Inhlangano engingaphansi kwayo, i-umbrella body yama-commodities athakwa-12 noma ngaphezu kwalokho, inhloso yokuthi kube ne-umbrella board emakhathini flat kwaba zingqinamba ezikhona lapha udokotela uMjwaha abona khona ukuthi sifanele ukwakha le organization ukuze ukwazi ukukhava zonke lezi nhlanga.
The organization Makatini Agriculture Development Forum is an umbrella body of commodities whereby it was initiated and introduced by the provincial HOD of Department of Agriculture to address the problem of farmers.
Sasinengqinamba ke nokho esasiyihambisile uma ngikhumbula kahle kwakuse-Richards Bay lapha afika khona wadweba indilinga ngokubona iy'nkinga ukuthi masihambe siyozakha emakhathini. Sakwenza-ke lokho nakubethi namanje sisenengqinamba ezingaxazululeki njengoba bengibalile nje ukuthi sinama-commodities ahlukene, sinokotini isikhothini, sinommbila, sino-fruit and veg.
We started the organization because we advised to start it as a unity to address the problems of farmers. The 12 commodity plants that we have are sugarcane, cotton, fruit and veg and others.
Iy'nkinga zethu-ke esibhekene nazo lapha emakhathini azisolveki ikakhulukazi ikotini. Nakube-ke sebekhulume kakhulu lapha endlini. Kodwa-ke kukhona lo mbuzo othi ubani ongakhuluma kangcono umlimi nomuntu ofike ekhakhe nje engasebenzi.
We have heard a lot about Makatini stories and I feel like I'm not empowered to talk about it, but I should mention that a lot has been talked in this house today, but I feel that I'm a farmer, I can speak better for farmers rather than an outsider for our own farmers. We still think with challenges of BT cotton in Makatini.
Iy'nkinga esibhekene nazo lapha emakhathini kwi-BT cotton sifike saba nayo imaket engawuthenga ukotini wethu kodwa sasibana ney'ngqinamba nje ukuthi seyikhona asiphumeleki siney'kweleti esingazi futhi ukuze ukuthi singaphuma kanjani. Kodwa futhi khona lapho umhlabathi esiwulimayo kuhle ngendlela emangasayo kumbe la e-South Africa umhlabathi wesibili okuthiwa umhlabathi onothile ongakhiqiza noma yini ongayicabanga. Yebo, kuliqiniso.
We had got an established market, very formal market, but we still have got a problem and we don't know how to move out from that problem because we still sitting with debt. we cannot repay the loan. Yet our soil is very fertile soil and is classed as number two in South Africa.
EBT cotton imbewu esiyitshalayo sinemizekenzelo manje ukuthi awukhona ukuthenga noma yiphi imbewu velo benembewu nje yodwa kufanele uyitshale ngenxa yokuthi ungumphanto weyegridal sakho.
We have no choice except for BT cotton. We don't have any other conventional seeds. There's only one type of seed which is BT cotton, and as farmers we are stuck in, and Monsanto is the supplier of that seed.
Angizixila kakhulu kwe marketing ngoba ukhona nomlindelo ozokhuluma nge marketing. Umbila siyawutshala umbila kakhulu kodwa nakhona futhi sineyinkinga akukho lapho esingawuthengisa khona. Kanjalo ubhontshisi izinto esinazo siyayitshala kakhulu emakhathini kodwa kunjalo futhi sinalezi yinkinga esibhekene nazo njengoba nisiza ukuthi emakhathini futhi emakhathini iflethi iyakweleta o-land bank kuliqiniso.
It is true that Makatini farmers are owing the land bank a lot of money. That is very true. I wouldn't dwell much on marketing because no media will address that. We still have got a problem of other commodities like maize and beans. We still don't have a market.
Nayo ibhekene nenqinamba nje enkulu ukuthi uyatshalwa umoba emakhathini kakhulu. Umpeyono esathi uma ufika sawuthatha ngelikhulu esasazi ukuthi ungahle usilekelele ukuthi iphele ikweletini esasibhekene nazo zidalwa ukotini. Kodwa nakhona inqinamba ngoba imakethi ngendlela esekudini ngayo. Sesikhulumile-ke nokho nohulumeni nanoma ubani obengaqhamuka ethi uzokwenza ucwaningo emakhathini flat, ingqinamba esibhekene nayo usekudini lapho esihambisa khona umkhiqizo wethu imali yonke idliwa i-transport.
We do have sugar cane as another commodity. We started sugar cane as to alleviate the loans or try to repay the loans that was contributed by BT cotton. But still, with the sugar cane, we have got a mill cane which is far from us. The money that the farmer should get goes to the transport cost rather than to the farmer. But we still think the sugar cane is better than the cotton.
Yingqinamba esibhekene nazo lezi emakhathini flat. Inkampani le ewumakhathini cotton kwaba yinkampani eqhamuka izosisiza kodwa izange isize even oyedwa umlimi. Njengoba ngikhuluma nje kumanje abalimi batshalile ukotini kodwa ukotini indlela othengiswa ngayo ungamangala ukuthi umlimi ufike afake amabhele awu-6 ukuphele 3 weeks engayitholi imali. Lo mlimi ingqinamba abhekene nayo ubhekene nabantu ade bekukotini bafuna imali plus kwayena uqobo lwakhe ulambile udayise uzethe umkhiqizo wakhe la emshinini ngenxa yokuthi uzothengwa kubile namali emuva makhathini futhi nakanayo imali kufanele kuzoprocesswe lokotini awulethile ngaphambi kokuthi ukhathe umlimi ezothola imali. Ingqinamba enkulu esibhekene nayo kuyo le makethi lesisiyitholile sinayo emakhathini flat.
When we got Makatini cotton gene, we thought we have got the problem is solved. But the problem now, since Makatini cotton gene company is alone, when you sell about 6 bales of cotton to them, if you sell today, you don't get your cash today. You have to wait for some weeks. And when you go back home, you still have to pay for the labor, people who have been helping you. And that is a problem. It takes time for the farmer to get paid.
Lokhu ke okusibeka eovalweni ukuthi iy'ngane zethu zizofunda ngani thina sizodlana kumanje ubheke phansi utshalwa kwamahektha kulo nyanga kulungiselela ukuthi ngase kutshalwa amahektha u-700 hectares siqalele ku-1000.8 hectares last year sibe sitshale 900 hectares so uma ubheka kuyakhombisa ukuthi ubheke phansi asike phambili
observation when you look back we had planted 1008 hectares previously and last year season we planted about 900 and this year we are targeting to plant about 700 hectares under irrigation and that strikes us because how are we going to feed our own and how are we going to let our kids go to school
kumbe kube khona lapho esisiza khona kule ngqinamba esibhekene nayo emakhasini ngoba umhlabathi wethu muhle ngendlela emangalisayo kodwa nje asikhoni ukuya phambili ngakho-ke siyacela ukuthi khona ucwaningo selenziwe kakhulu ucwaningo ne-training futhi iyenziwa kodwa nje siyabheka ukuthi izwe lakithi alikhoni ukusimama kahle singazi ukuthi ingqinamba ngakho siyadinga ukuthi uhulumeni kube khona lapho asisiza khona
We urge and ask the department to give us any support that could help us to move out from this problem. We are also saying we have got a good soil. We have received a lot of trainings and a lot of trainings we have received and a lot of research has been carried out, but still we are stuck. I'll give it to Nomli Dela.
Hey, ngizokhumela ngaphansi kwemakethe. Sesesithize nje okunye nokunye u-BK umzalo wethu lapho siphethe omkhulu. Kunama-crops ahlukahlukene. Siwatshala ngalotamatisi no-green pepper, siyawatshala no-dry beans, no green beans, siyatshala komlo. Ngoba uhulumeni uzowasakhela i-cold room angabhosisi. Okumanje cishe seyiyela ko-10 years ayisebenzi. Ihleli.
I will talk about marketing and I would like to thank my chairperson Beatrice that he has elaborated on what is happening. We do plant a lot of commodities and a lot of fruit and vegetables and the government has also in the last 10 years has established a cold room which is not in use and it has never been in use.
Sambona esisoka lengcono kunathi sabala laba u2 kanye lapho sesocunezela khona kakhulu.
The last 5 years we had two companies, OTK and Bonisa, which were helping us. But when Makatini Cotton has come to the play, we opted not to use Bonisa and OTK. We thought Makatini is our God.
U-OTK noVunisa wayenehlobo eyiningi ezimbiwo. Kwase kuthi mase ngamakhathini cotton sasesitshala imbewu eyodwa i-Volgard ne-Roundup Ready. Enema-expenses ladura ngendlela emangalisayo njengabantu abaphuwa abantu bangafinansa nawo government sigcina sesidayisele imfuyo yethu.
You bear with me, Mr. Chair. I don't know how to say it in the right way. But when Makatini Cotton has come to work with us, he came with one type of seed. While previously with Bonisa and OTK, there were a number of variety of seeds, including the conventional seeds. But when this new company came in, the seeds itself was very expensive in such a way that the poor farmer cannot afford to buy. Instead of buying it, he has to get a loan, maybe a loan from a member of the household or sell his livestock for him to start planting.
Manje ngiyabonga kakhulu uma uMr. Lombali athi ama-farmers from Makatini Cotton bahamba ngama-BMW. Uma ungasuka yotshala eMakatini Cotton ohamba nge-BMW, lokhu ungahambi nangebhayisikili.
I'm very sad to hear the case study by Hans Lombard that the farmers in Makatini are driving the BMW. I'm telling you today, if you go and start farming there with your own BMW, with your own assets, you'll come back walking or not even having a bicycle. I feel very deeply sad because we in Makatini, I think we are divided. There are those who are being lobbied by the companies that are providing the PT coating, and there are those who are very, very poor. In my case, my father had 20 cattle, but today we have got not even have a single cow to milk for our children. We do plant practice household production like bean production and maize, but we found that in Makatini irrigation scheme itself, where we have practiced a lot of chemical production, GMO operations, hybrid operations, all those highly input cost chemicals, you find that in the second year, even if you do the crop rotation, there's a reduced crop yield. Again, Mr. Chair, this is difficult one to express, but I'll try. We have been visited by Woolworths and some other spiced company who is coming to us and tell us to plant a lot of hot chilies, a lot of dry beans. But when we discussed about how much am I going to get per kilo, they told us it's about 2 rand, and I feel that is not good because we are the one who are mining the gold. And though themselves, when they sell the product, is very high in the US, and I'm asking the government to come down and help the farmers, come and support us. We are really suffering. I'll conclude by saying we need your support as a government to come and help us. How could we better our situation? Because where we are stuck. And whoever comes to us also put their feet on our neck. Mr. Chair, I would like to take this opportunity to take the opportunity that has been given to me. I just want to cover some points that has been left out. My name is Lawrence. I work for Bauch, and I'm the agronomist, the agriculturist. I'm the community facilitator. I'm not a consultant. I work with farmers every day of my life. I stay with them. I observe the operations. I observe what is happening around outside there. Whether it's a GMO operation, the hybrid, I really feel very bad about the situation that the farmers are caught in. They have not choose to be stuck. We as the fundies, we as the experts are making them poorer and poorer. We are confusing the small scale farmers. For instance, when you talk about GMO choice, the labeling choice, we are depriving the culture of our people. In our culture, the seed biodiversity is very important because we use different seeds for different cultural practices, rituals, and events. So, in terms of being South Africa, being aiming to South Africa to be the whole GMOs, I think we are not addressing the one of the strategy for Department of Environmental Affairs, which is the promotion of indigenous species, the promotion of biological resources, and the sustainable use of these biological resources. In terms of economics, I just want to highlight a few things. They both have touched something about loans. When farmers plant, as a commercial farmer, you need to have a loan, you need to be financed somewhere. And some of our farmers, and our farmers, poor farmers, they cannot gain something, or they cannot have a farm a loan institution whereby they could get the funds from for farming operation. If they do, they are getting the loans and they get stuck because at the end of the day they cannot pay the cost of a financial institution. The input cost of every GMO's conventional seed, especially the hybrid as well, is very, very high versus the output, especially on dry land. South Africa is very dry. And we should also note that it's very important to address the food security issues, not only the commercial farming aspect, because not all of us are farmers and not all of us are geared to be farmers. We are not born to be farmers. The farmer, you have the choice. To be in a food security sector, you have to have the choice. The status of a farmer is being lowered, was being reduced in terms of when I loan the money from my wife for going to buy seeds on GMOs because of the technology fee. And after 6 months, 8 months, I cannot pay back that money to my wife. How is my wife going to look? How is my wife going to look at me? Is he going to see me as a man? Is he going to still respect me? I think the status of some men is also being not looked at properly. I just want to also comment about the deflation itself and the awareness of the GMO. When you ask any ordinary farmer in Makatini or elsewhere, Bizana, Eastern Cape, I travel as far as Eastern Cape, you ask, do you know about GMO? They'll tell, no, we don't know that thing. But yet they're planting it and the department is pushing it. If I say the department, they are saying the department is running a lesson food production for us, and yet at the end of the day, after a year, you cannot continue. They are not there to help you. They only help you for 1 year. After 2 years, you have to be on your own, and you have to pay a lot of money for the operation. This is about 8,000 rand a hectare. Where a farmer can get that money without being supported somewhere for commercial practices? To define GMOs is very difficult. I don't know how the other companies are able to define it. We need to capacitate farmers. We need to tell people, give them information for them to be empowered as well as to know what's happening. The other observation I've seen in Makatini, where this year last season there was a new pest which nobody knows about it that has come to the area after the operation of GMOs. To me, super pest is a problem in GMOs. I've been to the area in Pietermaritzburg called Mponjini, where there was operation of GMOs. There's a big operations for Pana. There are a lot of weeds that were not there before. Even the cows, livestock cannot graze on them. And in the issue of and the other issue of the economics, there's a study in China, this issue of saying there's reduced cost in BT or GMOs. There was a study in China with the University of USA, Cornell University, that was done for 6 years. The first 3 years it was okay, but longer the term, after 6 years the study was carried out again, they found that those farmers who were practicing BT cotton were losing a lot because of the super pest, because of the super weeds, because of the yields has been reduced, and those who are practicing conventional system still move from bottom up. The graph is going up. The other way, the graph is starting radical up and goes up quickly. So to me, that's the same thing that has happened to Makatini. There is no extra yield. I repeat that, there is no extra yield. In Makatini, we did a study for 8 years. Before the introduction of BT cotton and after the introduction of cotton, the yield results were still the same. I would like to conclude my presentation or our presentation by asking this house to really look at the matter, who's really benefiting, is it the farmer or the seed company? I think you are.
Shambulela, come on to Makanis, Kaliti. Shambulela Kapulu, the presentation. It's very interesting. It does add scientific depth. The discussion was very agronomist in the ground. Insights that you're sharing with us are quite different. I'll open up questions for us to the three presenters.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to find out from the... You mentioned that, you know, when they grow these big, okay, as the problem is they can't move it. Where seems to be the problem? Is it because of the quality or is it because there's no market for it? I just wanted clarity. Thank you.
Other questions? Okay. It great to see I end at a school. The number is bigger than our faculty. Sithenge izinto zidura. Kona uma seziyodayiswa zithenge ngemali encane. Nayo inkinga. Une-loan inkulu kunemali ozoyithola. Sekufanele ukhokhe awukwazi ukukhokha. So nayo ingqinamba-ke elapha emakhathi. Njengoba ngisho nje ngithi ikhona imakethe kakotini. Makhathini kothini efika wafike wathenga ikhilo ngu-410 cent. Ozothola ukuthi manje lu-2.95 cent. It's 2.55 cent. Ngikhuluma ngemali okuthengwa ngayo namhlanje. Akukho kwehlile, imbewu iyadura, imithi iyadura, umanyolo uyadura. Mase kufanele kuthengwe leli bhele lizothathwa ngesenti. Akasabhekakali umlimi ukuthi uzokwazi nikukhokha iy'ndleko ayidalile.
We do produce a high quality crop which is graded, but the problem is the input cost or the production cost is very high. When Makatini cotton come, they had purchased the kilo from us as 410 cents. That is about 5 years ago. But today, the input costs are escalating and still high, but you sell the same 200 kg bale today, and per kilo you get about 255 cents.
If I could ask you, are you saying that after this experiment of about 6 years, in which you used GM fodder, there's no longer any benefits? It's the same, the people never used it before. So there's no continued value recovery from using GM fodder. Is that what you're saying?
It's exactly that. When we have done a study for 6 years, we did it before the introduction of BT coating, we did it after the introduction of coating. There is no value for extra yield. The production is still the same, and in turn, the cost goes higher, higher, and higher.
Is it possible for you to compare to the original forms of coating production? Non-GM production. Can you go back and switch? Is that good?
There's no more conventional seeds in this area. Only BT cotton.
Machamas, and then allow Dr. Chapter to comment.
Can I just ask? I'm not quite clear. You were growing cotton before. Or was it only in the last 8 years that you've been doing the BT cotton? Is it because it's GM that the problem has arisen, or is it because just the general market sort of conditions and situations and the problems of getting your crop to market and the price that you're getting? I mean, can you blame it?
Where does the GM factor come into the problem? Before we're planting different types of cotton, I think from 1987, there was a Sikala and OK 90 and other different kinds of cotton. But today we are using BT cotton only. But it is too expensive, they say. 5 kg for it is 435 kg per hectare. It means 25 kg. We are not talking about land prep. Land prep is 1.7 per hectare. We are not talking about Roundup Ready chemical which we are using. But last time we didn't use any chemicals, just seed and fertilizer, just seed only because the soil that time it was too fertile.
I think maybe. This question of Machamas. Where does the GM problem, can you elucidate, explain to us where the GM dimensions come?
The GMOs, I think it has got a problem here because we have planting on irrigation system. We are using that same seed, and outside our field at home, we are using same seed. At home, we are not using any fertilizer, any herbicide, you see. It means it won't be the same, and even the expenses, it won't be the same.
For me, the way I've observed the farmers, the BT cotton is the cost that they can observe. Nothing about the effect on the environment and health. It's only about the cost that is escalating, the high input cost, and the marketing when they go to sell. That's what is striking them. That keeps them stuck in the problem. But for maize, it's different.
Thank you.
for maize is different. There's a lot of cross-pollination for maize. If you've got your own traditional seeds, farmer A, farmer B. Farmer A has got traditional seeds and farmer B has got BT maize. The cross-pollination takes place and the birds tend to come to your place because you're also, in traditional way, you tend to feed everything. You feed the environment. They forget about GMOs. They come to you, they enjoy it.
Thank you, Chief, for the opportunity to provide some insight. And I'm by no means saying that this explanation is relevant to what has been presented here this afternoon. I think my understanding of the institutional arrangement around how seeds, as well as the relevant inputs, are acquired, is the following: that farmers enter into a contractual agreement and with the ginning company, which can either be Marketini Cotton or the previous one used to be Funisa, I think. Then based on the as part of this agreement, the farmers are sold the seeds as well as assisting them to get access to funding through land bank. Now, as part of this agreement, farmers are then supposed to sell the cotton back to the ginning company. However, there are examples which has been published where instead of selling the cotton back to the ginning company and honoring the contractual agreement, farmers has chosen to rather sell it to the new ginning company and therefore not honor the contractual agreement, which then led to the increase in debt. And I'm by no means saying this is the situation in what we hear this afternoon. There are also a number of support programs by the Department of Agriculture, which is the national program is supposed to be implemented by the different provinces. It's the Comprehensive Agricultural Support Program, and there are also finance packages, the Micro Agricultural Finance Scheme, which is supposed to provide access for farmers to credit. On a visit by our office to some of these small scale farmers at Marketing, we've seen examples where the technology is really where they have huge returns on the technology. However, there are problems in terms of the agro logistical infrastructure that is necessary to support those small scale farmers. And I think one has to be careful and really do an analysis of where exactly the problem lies, because I am familiar with issues around irrigation that is inadequate in those regions, as well as transport to the relevant markets. And one should not forget there has been, the cotton price globally has been extremely, extremely low. Thank you.
I think we are told by what before we continue. Again, I would like to thank you for coming all the way from here again. I'm very grateful because we want to get all angles of the discussion. It's very difficult for me to open up this place. Could we then invite Professor Jocelyn Webster, who is the Executive Director of Africa Bali, to come through? We live in a capitalist country, so each time there's something free, we have to underscore that so that people know that there are possibilities. just getting the food and getting the coffee. But just go in and look and come there.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak here today, and I appreciate the fact that you're making time for the other side of the story. Africa Bio is a biotechnology association. It's an association of stakeholders with over 100 members, the academia, research organizations like the ARC, that has people from out the whole food chain who are members, right from the farmers who are planting the technology to consumers who are involved in eating it. And my question is, do we need more regulations for more GMOs in this country? I think the greatest challenge facing mankind is that the challenge of distinguishing between reality and fantasy and truthful propaganda. I think it's very important that we look at the facts and make sure that we don't mix the facts with misinformation, as we get said. This particular presentation that I'm using quite a number of slides, and I would like to acknowledge them from Professor Bruce Chassie of the Department of Food Science and Human Nutrition at the University of Illinois, who is a well-known scientist. Who has done a lot of work on putting together with a number of people throughout the world information on scientific information on this particular subject. And he has fed into another organization, which is ILSI, which is an organization that looks at various different food and food safety issues. And his particular, this comprehensive review and the ILSI website, which is highlighted here, you can go onto that website and see 1,200 peer-reviewed papers, which give you the scientific information. The scientific information, in fact. I think that's important. But I want to just go back a bit and talk about traditional plant breeding and then what happens with plant biotechnology. I presented this point to you before, and I think some of the people who were at an agricultural portfolio committee where members of the environmental portfolio and science and technology were also invited. And it is concerning that we need to keep having the debate. I think it's great to have the debate, but do we move forward? And that's my concern. And I think if we have the debate, it would be great to have people again here that have got such as the scientists who have got a lot of knowledge on agriculture, agricultural economists, people such as who was supposed to be here, Sandthorne, the Food Association, who deals with all the seed, and the researchers that are working and developing the technology, so they could also give their inputs into this debate. But getting back to plant breeding, when you breed in a traditional way, you're mixing two lots of genomes, and a genome from a plant can have 30,000 genes, 30,000. And when you mix those two together, it's very difficult, as you can see here, you might get a whole lot of other characteristics that you don't want in the new variety, and then you have to keep on selecting and selecting to get exactly what you want, and carry out breeding and breeding until you get to what you need. Now, with plant biotechnology, you can isolate the one gene that you want, the trait that you need, and transfer it to the commercial variety fairly precisely. Then I want to show you where have we come from. This is Tiasinski. We've used plant breeding over decades, thousands of years, to produce maize. Now, if that's not and modification, I don't know what it is. That's what we started with, geosynthetics, on the one side, and we've developed our maize that we eat today. And there's various different forms of maize which are shown there also on the slide. I think it's very important that we understand that we have been mixing genes, moving them around through traditional breeding for a very, very long time. If you look here, and you can look at how the lettuce was developed. The wild type, that's through plant breeding, you got to that lettuce. This is carrots, the wild type, and over many, many years of breeding, you got to these carrots. Don't look anything like it. Nothing like it at all. Wild cabbage, look what we've got out of wild cabbage. All these various different types of vegetables. Right from cauliflowers to broccoli and cabbage itself and Brussels sprouts. That's quite a difference as far as I would say to the genetic makeup of where it came from. And we need to understand that. That if we're moving around thousands of genes in the beginning, and if we say that these are all safe, none of these, by the way, have been through any safety analysis. This is the same for all these different crops that I'm mentioning now. I'm going to just look through them. I'm happy to leave this presentation. There's a lot of crops that have been developed in the same way over thousands of years. Now, are GMOs safe? I don't think that's the right question from a scientific point of view. It's the application of the technology that needs to be evaluated on a case-by-case study, and I believe that that is exactly how our GMO Act works. Case-by-case analysis with a lot of precautions, so I believe the precautionary principle is being applied in the execution and implementation of the GMO Act as it was and the amended GMO Act. And as was mentioned by a previous speaker, Mr. Hans Lombard, this has been reviewed, the risks have been reviewed by all these different organizations, the World Health Organization, the OECD, the European Commission, all the different national academies and world societies, it goes on and on and on. And generally the outcome is as safe as or safer than plants produced by conventional breeding. They pose no new or different risks than conventional crops. So we've had 10 years of 400 million hectares and 8.5 farmers growing it, and no obvious harm or that should be lost to the environment or agriculture, but there have been economic benefits. More income and less pesticide, a cleaner environment. This is a study done by Brooks and also a study from Chassie, and the analysis showed that there's been substantial net economic benefits at the farmer level amounting to a cumulative total of $27 billion. And the technology has significantly reduced the release of greenhouse gas emissions from agriculture, which is equivalent to removing nearly 5 million cars from the road. Now, I think when we do to an analysis of the risks around technology, we have to go through an analysis where we weigh up the risks. And as environmentalists, as concerned about the environment, I'm sure this committee would like to see the use of this technology that would allow us to reduce significantly greenhouse gases, which remain a bit of a problem at this time as an environmental issue. We often get told that monarch butterflies can be decimated by this technology. There's nothing further from the truth, but if you go and look at the literature, we'd be happy to provide you with all those things. But you get this kind of negative publicity around genetically modified corn, telling it's untested and unlabeled and it's bad, it's frankenfood. And there's these kinds of things that you see all over the world. But actually, if you analyze the risk and you look at whether it's a high risk or a low risk, and this is done looking at the data in the United States what has been actually proven to be the risk from their data, from their food safety analysis. They've found that it's first of all diet, either overnutrition or undernutrition, foodborne illnesses, untested organic foods and supplements, natural toxicants, food allergies, additives, pesticides and herbicide residues, other food ingredients and additives. I once counted on the label 40 different additives that had been added to the food product I was buying. Didn't tell me whether I wanted to buy it or not, because actually I wanted to buy that food. The label might have highlighted all the different 40 ingredients, most of them chemicals, but I had to buy the, I wanted to buy that food. I decided that's my choice. GM food, by the way, is the last issue that's ever raised as a food safety risk by the food safety analysis that takes place in the United States, where we have 280 million people eating it every day. And then we have the issue that biotechnology can also be a part of the solution for food safety issues, which means that, in the scheme of things, there seems to me to be not enough understanding of the benefits of the technology as weighed with the risks. So, would we be wise to look at stopping this technology in this country? I don't think so. I don't think we have really weighed up properly the issue of the benefits. And I do believe that when we have more information, which we believe we'll be getting out of the bill soon, on how biotechnology will help us with global warming issues, I think we'll find that there's going to be tremendous benefits to be seen, and we need to take those into consideration if we're looking at environmental issues. If you look at the economic benefits, and this is a paper which I'll be happy to send to you, if you look at each different country, there has been, from 1996 to 2004, when this study was carried out on farm income gains per country, you'll see quite significant figures. In China, it's 4.2 billion increase to the farmers. It's no wonder that they want to buy it year in, year out. And they haven't stopped buying it, and the Cornell study that was supposedly the definitive study has been shown not to be so definitive after all. So I think we need to look at that too. I think if you look at, for example, the United States, where they have an oversupply of food, whereas we in this region do not have, I'm not talking about South Africa, I'm talking about the region, Southern African region and Africa as a whole, they have had an increased economic benefit of 10.7 billion. And it goes on Argentina, where 95% of their soya is genetically modified, there's an increase of 10.1 billion to the farmers in that country. I always think to myself, what must I be worried about as a scientist and as a consumer? And this depicts it for me. I won't eat anything that's genetically modified. It could be unhealthy. It's just picking out on the chips and getting fatter and fatter. I know that I'm fat because I actually overeat and under-exercise. It's not because I'm eating genetically modified foods or conventional foods. It's because I'm not exercising enough the amount of food I'm taking in. We need to look at the issue. How much of a safety threat is this really? So the consequences of over-regulation, I think we need to look at that, because we've been asked to look at having more and more restrictive regulation. What would be the consequences if we do that? It impedes product introduction. Labels raise costs and are interpreted as a warning sometimes. I'm not particularly gung-ho whether we have labeling or don't have labeling. I do believe consumers need to have information. How we get it to the consumers is another issue, and I'll come back to that. We would have continued disruption of trade if we have over-regulation. We have a barrier to the diffusion of technology for developing countries and diminished economic and environmental gain, which I think is very considerable and a great issue we need to think about in South Africa, a country that needs to look at developing economically and environmentally. I think it's important to look at this point, putting huge amounts of money into municipal hypothetical risks damage public health by diverting resources and distrusting the public from major risks. I think that's where we are today. In South Africa, as has been mentioned, we have herbicide tolerant cotton, herbicide tolerant soya, herbicide tolerant maize, and we have insect tolerant maize. In fact, there's been an approval of the stack gene of herbicide tolerant and insect tolerant maize, such as there is for cotton. Over 90% of the cotton that we grow today is genetically modified. Now, that tells me something. If a farmer won't go back and buy the seed, particularly a commercial farmer won't go back and buy the seed unless this is doing something for them. And this is year on year out that this is happening. Over 55% of soya, that's actually, it's gone well over 55%, it's nearly 75% of funds mentioned, and it's 44% at the moment of maize that is genetically modified. Again, farmers don't buy the seed every year unless it's a benefit for them. Let's have a look here from the results from an independent study done by the University of Reading. They came out and tested whether or not there was a difference in yield between conventional maize and BT maize or herbicide tolerant maize. And you can see there is a higher yield. This study I can also send you the peer-reviewed paper. What is interesting to me is in this particular study as well, they showed that both the BT maize and the herbicide tolerant maize had a higher shelf life. It could be stored for a lot longer. That's because there's less fungal contamination, because these cobs don't get so, they're not chewed up by the insects, so they don't get so much fungal contamination, so they last longer. They also have far less mycotoxins, so have a health benefit. So if we look at what we do as a safety assessment under the GMO Act, and I'm afraid to say this is not just a desktop study, you can't do toxicology studies by just doing it on a desktop. You have to, the company that, or the public institute that is going to be submitting this data to the Department of Agriculture for review under the GMO Act, has got to do toxicology studies, and those are done by feeding trials with different animals. Pathogenicity, allergenicity, digestibility, nutrition changes, unexpected products, and the stability of the gene, those are all checked. In addition to that, we have socioeconomic issues that are looked at as a final analysis, and trade and labor and public acceptance, along with the environmental studies. It takes 3 years at least to have done your environmental studies once you've got the food safety studies carried out. This is not a trivial process. This is a very detailed process, and in fact it is compared to as detailed as you need to do for a pharmaceutical. So GM crops are the most extensively tested and regulated in the world. In a peer-reviewed paper, in fact, it's in several peer-reviewed papers. And safety assessments are carried out in South Africa and other countries using standards recognized by the codex that was mentioned by the Department of Health. Africa Bio, the organization I represent, supports the approach of the Department of Health and codex. I think we have to have a consensus globally on how to label, because we're moving food around quite a lot these days, from one country to another, but we support labelling when it can be demonstrated that the composition, nutrition or intended use of food differs from the conventional counterpart. That then provides the consumer with some good information. Now I want to get back to the point about developing biotechnology. It's actually a government strategy. In fact, it was announced last week by the Department of Science and Technology. They have a new 10-year strategy which highlights developing biotechnology sector with the value added from the pharma to the pharmaceutical industry. And calls have been sent out for investment in this. You know, you won't get investment in this country unless we have an enabling environment for the development of biotechnology. Over-regulation will not attract investment. In fact, I've been told by many different organizations in the United States and even Europe that they see South Africa and the regulatory system in South Africa as a moving goalpost, and they're not sure how they can address it. So therefore, they're not sure that they want to invest here. If we look at some of the research now, I just want to highlight an issue for the region. The main domestic deficit in South Africa, and for us in the region, we're the only country that usually has a surplus. Zambia is sometimes has a surplus, but most other countries in the region do not. So we're looking at, in this country, how to develop maize that can have a higher yield. So using agricultural biotechnology, this is just some of the research. I just mentioned maize because it's a very important crop for the whole Southern African, East African region. We're looking at developing insect resistance, as you've heard about, virus resistance, drought tolerance, and fungal resistance. For a small-scale farmer, and I've seen it often on the farms here in South Africa, it's very hard to control this particular pest. It's called maize streak virus. There has been some work that has been developed in the University of Cape Town by Professor Thompson, and that's why I was so disappointed that she was not informed to be here today, and she could have told you about this work. Her work has transferred along, by the way, it's not just Jennifer, it's another person in her department called Ed Rubisky. So they have been able to transfer the maize streak virus coat protein to maize, and when you challenge the maize plant that has been genetically modified with the virus, is perfectly healthy, whereas the maize plant without the coat protein gene can immediately die, as you can see in this slide. That has been developed, and my biggest concern for this public research work that's been carried out in our universities and our research organizations is that the restrictive and over-cumbersome legislation that's been developed under all these different acts will deny us the opportunity of having these technologies because they're so costly to do the safety assessment and the environmental assessment at the rate we're going at the moment. It's millions of rand to do it. Will we be able to, as the general public, be able to have this technology in the future if we carry on with a regulatory system that is over-demanding and actually doesn't assess the benefits as well? Jennifer Thompson's also working on drought-tolerant maize, where she's isolating genes from a plant that's called a resurrection plant that can lose most of its water, about 75% of its water, that can be dried out completely, as you can see here on the screen, and then when it gets water again, it suddenly, within a few hours, it is able to regenerate itself. Oh dear. One second here. Okay, well, don't worry. I will leave it at that. That is the, some of the information that I think I've wanted to highlight. And to also point out that there are many other people that could give you lots more information. Many of them wrote in to the portfolio committee, but they weren't on the program. And they could have given a lot more scientific data and a lot of a broader perspective on this issue. And I thank you for your time and your indulgence to listen to me. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you,
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for your interesting presentation. I think everybody here fully realizes that genetically modified organisms are already out there. We're eating them all the time. They're part of our everyday lives. But we also know that 15 years is not an awfully long time. And there has been, for whatever reason, either pollution or toxic elements in our diet, there has been a considerable increase in various, some of the life-threatening diseases. Cancer, Alzheimer's, some of the autoimmune diseases, there's been an escalation in those as well, which I think has made the public wary and careful and fearful and needing to know, as my colleague Lawrence was saying, he had an upset tummy. Well, now he doesn't know what caused it. Maybe he ate something, maybe it was a genetically modified organism that had an allergen in it that was causing him those sort of problems. I mean, the precautionary principle says when an activity raises threats of harm to human health or the environment, precautionary measures should be taken even if some cause and effect relationships are not fully established scientifically. In this context, the proponent of an activity rather than the public should bear the burden of proof. We need to know. We need to know what is there. And if it involves labelling, I mean, in other Australia, for instance, you will see young mothers looking at the baby foods on the shelves, and they'll be just checking to see what's in them, because some of them will have a baby that's inclined to eczema or inclined to chest complaints, and they are told, and it's there, and it's there. So whether it, and it will be more expensive, but I think that element of fear and concern is going to be very much a part of the public consciousness until we are sure, and maybe with time it'll become so much part of our lives that those fears will be allayed. But I mean, it has happened that genetically modified crops have been looked at askance by European departments of trade and industry. So as far as marketing of produce overseas, we need to be careful about that as well. And I think it's not something that can be just cast aside. And when you say it's good for this committee to hear the other side of the story, we certainly heard it from Munir behind, who was sitting behind you for an hour before you came onto the platform. But anyway, thank you, and please take our concerns seriously.
You didn't say comrade friends. The questions I have to raise here are twofold. I mean, I see you mentioned that it reduces greenhouse gases in terms of pesticides, and that, but then I suppose so would organic agriculture, and so would even biodynamic agriculture, which apparently also sequesters carbon now. So, I mean, sure, if one compares it to your normal commercial agriculture that is operating around the world, it is highly greenhouse gas intensive at the moment. Question is, can we move to other forms of agriculture? And I suppose GMO is one form of that. Organic agriculture would be another, and they've all got their advantages and disadvantages. The issue, though, around this is around labeling, which is what we're kind of trying to constrain the conversation to, or the one aspect of it. And I mentioned there, I saw a faint glimmer of hope where you said that you don't actually have too much of a problem around labeling. Which is interesting. I mean, I think it's the one concern that has really come out today, that what people are saying is that we really need to look at choice. And, you know, the benefits and the scientific debate can continue, and we can continue to have that. But I think consumers are wanting to have the choice, wanting to know whether they want to choose this or whether they want something else. And I think that's something which we should look at being able to give them. One of the things that I wanted to ask you, though, was that when we send our food overseas, our maize and that food overseas, particularly to Europe, Is there a labeling process that goes along with that? Is there some kind of restrictions that are put on us in terms of we have to say where this food has come from? Are those restrictions on there? And if that is the case, I mean, surely then it would be easier to put such labels on our domestically consumed food as well. I just wanted to get into some of the kind of nitty-gritty details of labeling. We've all talked about it, but let's start to unpackage it now. What would this involve, and what are the problems with it, and whether this is possible or not?
Thanks. I think the one concern Professor Webster that we have is that you're correct to say that there's been crossbreeding of plants over thousands of years, but millions of years, and that process has been tempered by nature, you know. So whatever weaknesses that they were there, you know, they express themselves, modulated by all sorts of things. Okay? The thing about GMOs is that human beings are doing it. And they may get right on certain things. No doubt, they may strengthen certain elements, etc. But they are not nature, you know. So they may not be aware of all that is called upon. And that's the danger. And this one, no amount of scientific experiment can solve for us. So we have to be concerned that a process that took millions of years, we are now saying, no, we can test 6 months, all right. I think there's a little bit of arrogance, actually. That from human beings, that they think that they can bypass the process of taking needles of here, and that we should be all comfortable, everything is fine. I think that it's correct that we should be cautious, we should raise the issue that we're in. So I think for me, it's good that we're asking this question. This question must be asked. I think scientists must welcome this because they are not caught. So I think it would be useful to get your comments on that. No one is saying that we should stop technology. I've not heard anyone, all those who are against GMOs, no one is saying that. What we're talking about are safeguards. So I think the point that you raised, that we should not stop, but we have to raise the concern that we're having. Because we don't know everything about the technology, and they are in dispute. They are valid. So again, to be useful to get the comments on those as well. But Hamas, and of course I recognize in a complete way.
Another thing that certainly causes some concern is when you shout at the cabbage and the carrot and the whatever, that was an improvement, those natural processes were improvements on the cabbage. And it was new, the cabbage improved with hybridization, but it was the cabbage gene, then it's the carrot gene. But there is concern that now across genetic, the genes from other species are being used in the crossing process to produce something that is not just a hybrid of the original, but is a hybrid of something that may, I mean, there is concern that an animal gene will be used to be a part of the crossing process. Now, that happens to people who are vegetarians. There are all sorts of possibilities that, and we as the public, and we're much more of the public, this committee. We as the public are not quite sure where it's going and how it's happening, and if there is sufficient transparency as to what you're doing, or you're only showing us the pretty side of it.
Right,
Dr. Mpun. Yes, sir. I think you have already with the first part, concern, which is
that the scientists must not be bought. The other part is the professor, epidemiology, the frontiers of learning. How far does one actually go with friends of knowledge and expand it? Now, the problem here is that now we're dealing with human beings. And I want to relate this to cloning. You know the ship Dolly? Now, how far do you go? Because you see, if we just allow science to play God, the shepherd is saying, and that man, you know, is a communist. It's not easy to say God, you know. So it really comes from the heart. So the inner self, this ability, the inner self is actually coming out. So my worry is that now, we are going to use technology to manipulate the seeds, God, the seeds, the good. And today GMO goes on and on and on. Somebody mentioned the figure of 30,000, etc. Permutation, let's call it a permutation, I'm a new person. Now, and we keep on eating them. Now, this generation, what will happen to the fourth generation? Aren't we going to find ourselves producing monsters, with children with seven heads, and so on and so on? We'll just go and kill so long. 4 legs, 5 legs, 6 legs, you know, all those things. I'm not trying to be alarmist, but I'm just saying, that is now the concern that is in the subconscious. People are afraid to say so. But if you temper with nature, you carry on like that and you taste temporary success. But then how far do you go? Because there are boundaries. If one is to be true without that bound, God has this place. And if you exceed those boundaries, we'll find ourselves converting human beings into monsters. Or better still, dragons.
Well, thank you very much for those excellent questions. The first issue I want to address is playing God. Now, the interesting thing about this technology is it's nothing new. God was doing it well long before we were. Because there's a very, very lowly bacterium, I would call him, an organism called Agrobacterium tumefaciens, which actually transfers genes to plants itself. And interestingly enough, it has in its whole makeup, it has plant genes in its system. And that bacterium has been around for millions of years in soils all over the world. And it has been transferring genes to plants for millions of years. So this technology is not new. That's how we found out about it as scientists. We studied that organism, we worked out how it worked, how it transferred genes to plants, and we deactivated the genes that were causing a problem and used that system to insert genes that would be very useful. Now, that is, therefore, we haven't been playing God. God was playing God long before us. I think the issue, too, coming back to what taking genes from other species, I can see the concern there, but I would really encourage all of you to come to a course that's being set up at Tshwane University. It's just a week long, and it's on biosafety, that's the safety of this technology for non-biotechnologists. We will, Mr. Chair, get the University of Tshwane to send you the materials about this course, will take place in September. The reason why I suggest that is because if you look at DNA, the DNA that makes up your genes, everybody's genes, it's made up of four what's called base pairs, chemicals you can say, that are the same whether they're in a fish gene, in an animal gene, or anywhere else. So it's the same kind of chemical composition. I can understand, and I would agree with you, that if you're a vegetarian, because of your beliefs, you wouldn't want to have an animal gene in your food if you're a vegetarian. But actually, it would look the same as if it was a plant gene, it has the same materials. But for that reason, that is why we support labeling when there's something substantially different. And you can see that under the health regulations on labeling, they highlight the need for you to have labeling if you have transferred an animal gene. It's mandatory to have labeling there if you look at those regulations. So I think truly if you want to get to grips with this technology, it would be great if you could come to Pretoria. I know it's a bit of a strain with your busy timetables, but it's in the week, I believe, that Tshwane University is running this course, the week of the 24th of September, but I will make sure that that information is conveyed to you. The other issue, I do understand that you want to take this seriously. I do understand it's a confusing technology, and my concern is to make sure that you get all the information that you need to have so you can make informed decisions. And I really do wish that we had days and days to discuss this, because I think once you had got all the information, many of your fears would be put aside. You would be much more comfortable, and you would feel you were making good decisions on behalf of your public. There was a question about what is the issue of labeling when you send food to Europe. There is an issue in the European Union, and I like the point that you made, because you said the EU countries, their ministries of trade and industry are the ones that are concerned. And yes, why is that? Why is it that Europe has a concern and in the United States they don't have a concern? I find it very interesting, but if you really go down and look at it, a lot of it's to do with keeping other people's foods out because they've got a glut of food. They're starting to, you know, that the European countries were taken to the World Trade Organization by countries, the United States, Canada, Australia, and one other country which I can't think of right now, and the European Union lost the World Trade Organization's ruling on this issue, and they have been now forced to open up their markets to genetically modified organisms that have been proven to be safe, because they're using artificial trade barriers, and they have now been given that particular response from the World Trade Organization analysis of the situation. And we must be careful in South Africa not to put ourselves in that position as well, because it was definitely not a food safety issue. They all agreed at the European Union with their file that it wasn't a food safety issue. It was actually a trade barrier. Getting down to the issue of what is required as far as labeling is concerned, in general, the labeling issues, and this is also what I find very interesting, is that you'll find a lot of people saying you have to label meat if it's been fed on GM maize. That is not true. That is definitely not true. You have to label the product if it has, if it's genetically modified, and it has, you can detect over a level of 0.9%. But I have to also point out that they do not require in the European Union for you to label anything that has been processed using a genetically modified enzyme, even though you would probably be able to detect that DNA and that protein, or at least the protein anyway, in the product. And why is that? Well, my cynical nature says because most of the enzymes that are genetically modified have been developed in European Union countries, and they're protecting those particular products as well. So I think there's a lot more to this issue around labeling and trade barriers than you perhaps have got all the information today, and I wouldn't presume to be able to give it to you in one session. So I would really like to have the opportunity to meet with you up in Pretoria if you'd like to come, and come and meet with some of the scientists, the seed association, the people that are using this technology, many of the farmers, and really discuss it with them and get to grips with the issues firsthand. And I thank you again for your attention.
Thank you, Professor Webster. Our next presenter.
Just on the follow-up, it wasn't really answered.
Okay.
I mean, the one question was on relating the food sense of Europe, but then also in South Africa. In terms of, you know, just unpackaging what some of your concerns are around labeling in South Africa, what are the difficulties around that? Is this possible? You know, that's what
I'm sorry, I knew I was going to forget some question. I have a problem with labeling with something that is difficult to control. My concern is that if you're growing maize, for example, I mean, how is the lady on the side of the road going to label her maize cobs where she, you know, she bakes them on the side of the road? You know, I personally think that I think a lot of the issues that you're feeling here are related to the issues of not having enough information and knowledge about it. Once you were convinced that this was safe, you wouldn't be so concerned about labeling something that was safe. I know you want to have a choice, and I agree with that to a large degree. But I also have to come back to another issue of when in Europe they did the survey, and this is, you know, I'd really love lots of time. But in Europe they did a survey where they actually put labeled genetically modified food and put it on a shelf and reduced the price. Guess what? Nobody bothered about it. That just flew off the shelf. That was in a specific supermarket in Europe. I think you'd find that in this country too. If we have foods that are safe and are the good nutritious foods that are on our shelves and of a good price, then I think we're going to find people will buy them. And the other point I have to make is if you go and look, and this is why I really like to spend more time with you, if you go and look at how technology has made us be able to produce more on less land, that is a key issue for environmental issues. We can produce a lot more with the technologies we have today on the same amount of land. And we are not going to be in a position of taking away land for agricultural purposes and getting into our areas of parkland, which we are very proud of in this country, by having to make more food for our growing population. These are key things we need to consider in all of this. So maybe I haven't answered you specifically, but I would love to spend more time with you at tea time, well, there isn't tea, but to discuss this further. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. What you're actually saying is that at the end of the day, you will die. I'd rather die with a full belly rather than dying with an empty stomach. Okay. Our next presenter would be Mr. Mokazi Musi. Thank you.
Listen, I wonder if Professor Webster might consider changing the venue from Swahili from that to Zimbabwe, to Harare.
What do you mean?
No, I was just being facetious.
Zimbabwe is doing a lot of work with research as well. I think it's smart to have this simplified marketing.
What is the name of the land situation?
The land situation. I'm sorry, I'm not sure that. We'll be getting your call.
Okay, thank you. May I have your undivided attention?
Yeah, Paul.
Dr. Makati Musi is about to make a presentation. Bahaisu, Bebe.
Hello everybody, pardon my English. My name is Makati Musi, and I've been farming with maize since 1969, when I was only 14. And I worked for a commercial farmer till 1989. And now, I'm a so-called emerging farmer for the last 3 years. Yeah, I'm going to tell you about my experience with BT maize. These are the fields I planted first in 2005, and this is what they look like. And 2 months later, they were still doing very well. Up until 4 months later, I hosted an awareness day whereby I invited the farmers the emerging farmers around my farm for up to 10 kilometers away. Actually, not only 10, some of them were up to 40 kilometers away from my farm.
Sir, where is this Jewish embassy?
The farm is situated 11 kilometers away from Finville, in Soweto, along the Golden Highway, on the entrance to Fun Valley Holiday Resort. Thank you. And then we hosted these people who came to see for themselves how the performance goes, and that is also, and they went back. But then it wasn't only about the farmers and the neighboring farmers coming to see the performance. I also hosted parliamentarians and farmers from countries such as Kenya, Malawi, Uganda, Tanzania, Mauritius, and then to my farm to on a fact-finding mission. I even invited some environmentalists whom I met when they were demanding labeling on GM foods. I met them in front of a shopping center wearing t-shirts that said GMO label it. They were from Safe Edge, and I invited them to come and show me the difference between what I've seen and what the pros have shown me, what they know, the dangers that they know about. But unfortunately, when I called Charmaine from Safe Edge, she wasn't aware that she's been so far in Cape Province. So actually, we met in Randbeck at the shopping center where they were demonstrating their wishes about GMOs. And I even went to a building in Joburg next to Gandhi Square, where there were some of her colleagues at His Majesty building. I wanted, together with them, to inform the people of Joburg, because I'm there, I'm selling this maize to Joburgers and so on too, and I'm eating them since for the last 2 years. But they wouldn't come with me to display during World Food Day at Gandhi Square. They disappeared. They are no more at the building. Now, I don't know how we are going to inform the people if the very people who demand that we should inform the people to have an informed decision. But when I was there wanting to tell them my side of the story, they didn't evacuate the building. Thank you. And I won't go through so that this arithmetic. The difference is that the BT maize really did pay me 35 bags more than conventional when I was doing trials. And I not stopped there. I planted again. Since I'm no longer following this, I'm sorry, because I won't communicate this arithmetic. The picture here was after I milled some of the maize, I went to donate to hospices in Soweto. The lady seated there, one of them is my sister, unfortunately she's not appearing clearly, but she's a retired nurse. And there were even nutritionists whom I donated this maize after I milled on my farm. It was during last year, and I'm intending to give them again sometime this during the very same month, March. With the profit I made, this is what I afforded to buy second-hand hammer mill. That is when we were milling together with my son and other colleagues. when we were milling the maize to go and donate some of it even for ourselves. And in November 2006, I agreed again, this was during planting season. That's my planter, that's my colleague, my son was driving the tractor. But because of the rain pattern, the way the rain came in this year, I did not do very well with my maize, but it was performing well, as you can see there. By February, after having been planted in October, November, that was February, it looked very good, but I did not get the follow-up rain, and then we had to do the analysis. And thereafter, I harvested everything that was left after selling some of the green and fresh into Soweto now. And I'm left with a little bit that I'm still going to mail and give to those hospices again. And having eaten these maize for so long, in 2 years now, I'm not feeling any side effect. It's a pity I couldn't get to have those environmentalists to my farm to show me exactly where the dangers are. But I went all the way. That was also the same during the weighing and then all the arithmetic. It may show to me. Even during drought, I made a quantity to do more than conventional. I think I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kusi. It's good to know that a farmer is already.
I know Mr. Mukwege is bringing it to my
house. Yeah. So, he's going to remember. So, understand that he doesn't know anything about agriculture. But I'm underlining this point. You can at least learn now how the food that you eat, how it's planted, how it's
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to find out, you know, at the beginning of your slide when you were showing us your crop, cultivating and what it is and so forth. You had a pear sticking out, painted in red. What does that signify? No, it looks like iron rod, you know, a little pear, something like that. It's painted in red.
This plant says BT maize. That's because I planted BT maize on this portion. And diagonally, closer to the trees, there was conventional diagonally. And then, as you come, maybe close on this side toward the gate to my farm, you see conventional. The yellow board written CON, conventional base. That was for me to be able to identify which portion has missed it.
That's precisely the point that I was making all along, that I think, out of common courtesy, I need to know exactly what I'm buying. Just as much as you have those signs for yourself, so that you are able to tell that this portion, this is what I have, and that other portion, this is what I have. That's all. I'm not saying you shouldn't produce them. Because if you didn't have those pegs, then it all grew at the same time. It looks alike, doesn't it? You can't tell the difference.
You cannot tell the difference except by the stock borer. You can see the damage on the crops. If you open the crop, peel it open, you'll see the damage caused by the stock borer.
Thank you. But you've answered my question.
Any other comments? So, out of this activity, are you able to sustain the living through the farm? How big is the farm?
The farm is 21 hectares, but it doesn't belong to me alone. I have it's an LRAT, an LRAT beneficiary. And my colleagues got stuck in Soweto with their cattle, and they do not want to come. Maybe they didn't know what it is all about farming, because we had cattle in the location. They would always come and take their milk, go selling the location, but being muddy made them retreat. And if it wasn't for this technology, I don't think I would be able to deliver the quantities that I'm getting, because take the herbicide tolerant seed, for instance, saves me a lot that I cannot afford. Because, for instance, on this demonstration plot, doing weeding cost me about 3,200 rand, because I paid four women 200 rand each for 5 days, and in a month or two I paid them 3,200. But the herbicide calculated on my neighbor's farm, 20 liters cost is 400 rand, and to that water spray 6 weeks later, and you see your crop when you harvest. In my case this year, if I do so, I can spend this 3,200 rand producing even working on even bigger pieces of land, you know, like maybe even because I afforded to buy a tractor propelled water pump with the 207 harvest. I'll be able to grow vegetables now with the 3,200. So it does really empower me.
I think part of what we're asking here is really to look at what are called by success. It is possible that, I mean, sometimes you take a certain medication, it solves one problem, but it creates another. So we are, there's no complete final view that there are no side effects. It's good what's happening, but you don't know what will happen if you use GMO in Australia. Whether we're saying output. No one can answer this question. It's still a very new area of this work. So I think from the point of view of running the public, we're just posing questions, and we think that we're happy with the progress that we've secured. But we also could ask some of these questions. I hope you understand that. It's important for us. In case there are side effects, this is what we call a precautionary. Is there any other question, colleagues? With that, Dr. Mkwe?
Yeah, just very interesting then, because it's just down the last time again, I mean, it's hard to see an urbanite getting involved in agrarian activities. Now, you say the farm is just 21 hectares to convert, just to give a lay picture, it's 42 soccer fields, football grounds. Now, is that, as you say, you're not alone with the kind of a consumer. It's sustainable. It does not have anything to do with but it's just a space. You find it in a very sustainable and profitable enterprise venture. That's the first question. The second question is,
How do you get involved in this, you know, preparation of GMOs? Is it just a chance, or how did it actually happen? And number three would be the other black farmers. How do they reach this thing? How do they see this thing themselves in terms of sustainability? And number four, the people that get invited from Kenya or the place, etc. Was there any cynicism, and what was the view? And finally, how do you relate to the other white farmers?
Sorry, I couldn't write down the answers to the questions, but I think it's better.
Yeah, that's fine. No, that's fine. But some of the questions came through inspiration as I was asking them. Number one, let's start with the easy one. For the 21 hectares, it's about, in lay terms, about 22 soccer fields. You find that sustainable? Is it profitable? Especially that you are not a sole proprietor, but you are a consortium. Okay, number one. Number two, how do you get involved in the, how do you get introduced to GMO? Because you're just a township boy. How do you get involved? You have a son. Right. You just said to you, etc., etc. Number three, the people that you, for whom you hosted an exhibition from Kenya or etc., etc., what are their view after seeing your success and stroke non-success? What do they think about it in respect to the GMO itself? And number four, what about the other black farmers? Number five, how do you link up with other white farmers?
Answer them at random, sir. The 21 hectares that we own is not all arable. The real part of it that is too close to the river, it overflowed and we call my base. And then secondly, I've got to know the Africa Bio, for instance. I'm also doing tractor services to subsistence farmers. At one stage I got a job from the AFC cultivating Toronto, you know, and those are emerging farmers who do not have tools, others does not have even skills in soil preparation. So I got to know about Africa Bio when I was busy helping cultivating for those subsistence farmers. And you know, the Paraguayans were speaking, those sheikhs also. Yeah, that's where I got all the information. And some I got from a summit, I think it was in 2004, a summit that was hosted by my MEC, Habisi Musoku, in 2004 at Randfontein. There were these BT maize pamphlets that we read. Yes. And then how I relate to my neighboring farmers. When I started here, like I said, I've been into maize production since 1965. If you know protein of the outbreak of Soweto, I grew up working those fields, including Shawena. Shawena 3, they call it Shawena 3 today. We used to grow maize there, and as people grew to be naughty, we changed to sunflower, and they wouldn't steal it. Yes. So with all that experience, when I saw this technology and with the neighboring white people who know me from youth were pro this seed, and actually they are growing them commercially. So I don't think it was wise for me to, having been among the farm workers who, in 1975, I was among the farm workers who made it possible for South Africa to break a world record in maize production. now that I'm back into my country, I have my own portion.
How did that happen? How did that happen? Spiritual ambition. That's a stupid statement.
In 1979, how that happened? We had good rains. I was among the farm workers who were there. We had a little bit of problems, such as there were sanctions. South Africa had broken a record in milk production. So I want to produce enough for my country in my lifetime. Moreover, because now I'm a rightful owner of the portion. Okay, I answered all your questions.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Mosu. Again, continue the good work. We also continue to ask the questions, but continue with the good work. At this stage, I'd like to invite Mr. Glenn Ashton from the Safe Region.
Thank you, Mr. Can I present
the
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and Honourable Members, for your time. I'm Glenn Ashton. I'm the Chair of the Steering Committee of SafeAge. SafeAge represents a registered and mandated civil society grouping of over 4.5 million individuals from a broadly representative group of South Africans, including most of the faith-based organisations, labour, civic groups, environmental organisations, scientific specialists, and thousands of families and individuals. And as such, it is one of the largest civil society networks in this country. And I'd like to also state, Chair, that neither SafeAge nor its members have any direct interest in the success or failure of genetically modified crops or organisms. It simply represents a network of citizens concerned about the questions around genetic engineering specifically, and not around the more general issue of biotechnology. We have no particular problem with biotechnology, only with the one branch of that discipline, which is genetic engineering. I think we need to be very clear about this, especially because genetic engineering is largely based on highly disputed scientific theory. SafeAge was originally created to call for a freeze on the introduction of genetically modified food crops, but it has since narrowed its focus on calling for the identification, the labelling and the monitoring of genetically modified crops and other genetically altered organisms that are entering the environment increasingly. And it's occurring at an increasing pace, with meaningful oversight neither being applied nor being apparent. While the proponents of genetically modified crops insist that the GMO Act provides the safeguards, this act is internationally perceived as a facilitatory act, that is, it is a piece of legislation that enables the ready release of genetically modified organisms into the environment with minimal public oversight and interrogation. While there is some de facto oversight, it is based on extremely narrow criteria mostly supplied by the companies wishing to introduce these organisms. And these criteria are established primarily by the institutions which have vested interest in the promotion of genetically modified organisms, primarily but not solely as a commercial transaction. And I must please, Honourable Members, I just want to briefly comment here on the manner in which the members of this House, as well as our esteemed public service, have been grossly misled by vested interests involved in the promotion of genetic engineering. And I speak not only here about the massive transnational seed corporations that increasingly control our seed supply. I refer also here to supposedly independent agricultural analysts who are in fact paid lobbyists and public relations agents for these very same vested commercial interests. And I also refer to supposedly independent scientists representing supposedly independent organizations who draw significant amounts of funding from these self-same transnational seed corporations and the industry as a whole.
These supposed analysts and scientists hide and disguise their interests in that they are either paid for or are reliant upon the industry for their pay and for their careers. For instance, we were told that we grow 90% of our genetically modified, of our cotton here is genetically modified. What these people have failed to tell all of the honourable members that recent studies have shown that we have lost at least 56,000 jobs in the cotton sector since we've been growing genetically modified crops. Why do farmers buy them? Because they make the farmers' job easy, they increase mechanisation and industrialisation of agriculture. So I put it to the committee, please ascertain whether these groups have consistently misled the people and the government of South Africa regarding the need for open, transparent legislation of genetically modified organisms, particularly those related to food. And I put it to you, honourable members, please, to ascertain whether you have or have not, whether they have or have not consistently undermined the public right to know about whether our food is or is not genetically modified by consistently resisting and undermining meaningful attempts to label food derived from these novel organisms. Have they, through powerful lobbying organizations like Africa Bio and its members, not in fact denied us the right to exercise good scientific oversight of these organisms? For instance, I don't know if it's come up in previous presentations, but the Advertising Council of South Africa recently forced Monsanto to withdraw an advertisement where they claimed that genetically modified foods were safe, because Monsanto could quite simply not prove that genetically modified food was safe. So now, if they cannot pass that very low hurdle of persuading the Advertising Council of South Africa that their foods are safe, I don't know how they've managed to persuade everybody else. But, honourable members, even if the entire genetically modified food industry disappeared tomorrow, SafeAge would commit to continue its work, because we have, for instance, recently heard of an application to release a genetically modified mosquito site into our water courses. Other trials are underway on both crop-based drugs and medicines with no public oversight. Very few individuals are sufficiently informed to properly interrogate these systems.
This is sorry, Chair, but please, the mosquito there is
an... Honourable Member, there is an application for release. We have not seen the full application yet. We have applied for it under Public Access to Information Act. But it is evidently for a mosquito side, to kill a mosquito, obviously to control diseases, but it is evidently going to be for a trial release into water courses. Now, to introduce a genetically modified organism into a water course is grossly irresponsible if this is in fact what's going to happen, but this is what we understand is going to happen. So we are profoundly concerned about this, and I think as the Portfolio Committee for Environmental Affairs, we ought to interrogate these things. And it's extremely difficult to find these things. And then we get the information very late, and it is very difficult to actually then interrogate information from the people who are making an application.
If this thing is already safe and it's tested, then please show us the science. And don't play with it, of course. Never give a course. To obtain fundamental information that should be in the public domain. We have had members of SafeAge Biowatch reported before to find out basic information that should be in the public domain. So this committee has asked us, the scientific group of the dangers of genetically modified foods and organisms, and we and our members group have provided published peer-reviewed studies between two of those with our written submission. So the members do have copies of that, and we can provide many more references that should be members group. Under the Cartagena Biosafety Protocol administered by this department, the precautionary principle and the precautionary approach are both clearly spelled out in how they apply to both the release of genetically modified organisms and to the public participation in the consultation around the release of genetically modified organisms. This department and hence our government has failed to provide any meaningful mechanism to institute this I can confidently inform this committee that industry is laughing all of the way to the bank about the total lack of implementation of this important protocol. This is why it is again tempted to see the risk represents the proof to you in a manner that is no different to the manner in which the fossil fuel industry has undermined the global warming debate for decades. And really, this is not for want of outlying from civil society side. I've personally sat before this committee at least twice on behalf of Safe Aid and other civil society organizations, asking for more science, for more regulation, and for more caution in regulating these genetically modified organisms. And we have likewise sat before several other portfolio committees to kindly request for similar implementation of existing regulations. And what we have achieved really is a hodgepodge of regulation that again suits industry. Under the GMO Act, there is reference to implementation of an environmental impact assessment. So on 5 environmental impact assessments, we suggest of environmental impact assessments. There has been no public participation. Not one public assessment has yet taken place, even though it's submitted hundreds of applications for genetically modified organisms. This is quite simply because the GMO Act is administered by the Department of Agriculture, which used the Act as a facilitatory act again to promote supposedly progressive agricultural practice. And it's obvious that the Department has been sorely misled regarding the risks and benefits of these structures. 10 years of largely unregulated GMO releases have been static crop yields, have been deep innovation river in this country, and has been unprecedented concentration in the seed industry. All of these are strategically dangerous occurrences for our national food security, and this is a matter of grave national consequence. Until the Cartagena Biosafety Protocol, this department, the Department of Environmental Affairs, tourism, at the last moment, included a clause under the National Environmental Biodiversity Act, NEMBA, to attempt to regulate GMOs. Yet this clause calls for environmental assessment. I'm sure that the committee knows undoubtedly that there is a gulf of difference between an environmental assessment and an environmental impact assessment. The former is usually an environmental assessment is used to assess not so meeting greater supply by the applicant. The latter is a complete and inclusive process involving all interested and affected parties, not just the desktop study from the applicant. This is the implementation of NEMBO, the National Environmental Biodiversity Act, and the GMO Act. Not one previous GIA has yet been undertaken on any of the hundreds of releases of GMOs, and many of them have been highly controversial in the nature and from studies that have been obtained from many members of the So we accordingly request this committee to insist that mechanisms be put in place so that proper EIAs can be undertaken before any further release is committed. We have it on certain council, the deputy, the director general of this department, Mr. Jarvis, I believe the name of the Mr. Australian for pronunciation, has instrumentally needed any such adoption. We wish to make it clear that we do not wish to undermine science and give it a sense of too many times to come. That all we wish for is the application of proper, rigorous, transparent scientific oversight. And this has failed to occur today. There you have it. We therefore request for this and we ascertain just why full and proper EIA process has not yet been implemented. Secondly, we would ask respectfully the committee to the public and again in the name of the science for proper labeling and tracking regimes we put in place on all genetically modified organisms previously permitted without any future permit issues. Started from the European standards by African National Standards Authority, and our Prof. Cook in this, has put a framework system in place to track GMO food crops. It was clearly unduly influenced and undermined by industry, and that it reverses the owner's entire intent and insists that those wishing to remain GM-free must track and identify their projects. This is clearly quite the opposite of what was intended when the previous chair of this committee, and I definitely from the journal, indicated their interest in putting a tracking and labeling regime in place after the GMO embargo held in Stellenbosch in 2003, which was part as well. There is labeling and tracking at a national level in South Africa. Over 10% of our maize crop is exported through a company called African Products to the EU, and because they demand very strict tracking, it is in place. There are groups of cooperatives in South Africa that do label and track. There need to be no extra expense to track and label genetically modified crops. This is again, I'm afraid the public and the members, and we have all been misled by it is scientifically impossible to ascertain or verify in any meaningful manner whether GMO crops are affecting either the environment or the public. If there are enough tractors there. We can't say that nobody has been affected in America if there's no tracking. People are getting sick. You don't know what you're getting sick for. Well, if there's no tracking, you're already really sick. You know, we ask people for science. We're not asking for less science. We ask people more science than we've asked people before. So it's very inequitable and unjust to allow guilty energy to be free to contaminate. Whatever seeds or food products is being fit to contaminate, with no oversight of these tests, is to demand that farmers wishing to remain GM free must put an effective system in place to do so. Honourable members, the GM industry has until now had a free ride of their strength of this country, so we respectfully ask that you ask your fellow members of the House to put a proper labelling and tracking regime for GMO crops in place. You may do so under proportionally approach as far as under the biosafety protocol and introduced under both the Rio and Stockholm Convention. Indeed, you may do so simply as part of the public right to know. It is very clearly put forward by our members. It is unconscionable that the proper oversight of this industry has failed to occur in a nation where we have the first genetically modified staple food in the world, genetically modified white maize. This is in a region that occupies the epicenter of the HIV and AIDS pandemic. Very honourable members, this is unacceptable for an experiment of such magnitude and potential import on our people without their permission or any proper tracking available. GM food were to be labelled under the Consumer Rights Protection Law, but were removed from this bill at the very last moment due to poor advice by misinformed public service. And we wonder here what forces were at play. My effort is not too late to rectify this omission and to correct this particular oversight as this bill remains under discussion and not yet finalized. I believe it has not yet been referred to in the process of matching. So I put it to the honourable members that we fail to introduce these two basic and fundamental rights, EIA and labelling and tracking. This is what this committee was called to discuss today. As set out under international human rights, we have ratified as well as the intent of our laws and regulations, our constitution, and so on down. To not fulfill this would be an abrogation of the duty of you honourable members and of the House. And we as a public place up the extra trust in new members. In doing so, we respect that you reject the tyrant rule of industry, self-interested lobby groups. We ask you to listen to the mandate of the work of civil society. It has been all but silent for the 10 years that GMOs have been undemocratically forced on this country. And I thank the honourable members for the patience and time in dealing with this complex and core issue.
Thank you. And it works, but it hasn't been worked because
not perhaps to push up the fact that if she didn't see other part of the industry, it was also the marketing of the city. But are we shrinking our biodiversity and crops and our whole meaning of what is available, edible crops, are they going to be shrunk to the point where we suddenly realize we trust them, that really have value that were irreplaceable, and by that time it's going to be too late. So, not only are we supposed to do a crop, but we need to be maybe the part of the agriculture, should be really, really interested about this. I mean, the effect and the impact on biodiversity is that it should be something that is being looked at, and if it's becoming a concern, then we need to find out about it. But I think the idea of a kind of thing is going to be up here.
Thank you. that is biotechnology. It's something that we but genetic engineering is a particular sub-discipline of biotechnology. And the industry loves to say modern biotechnology instead of saying genetic engineering because it sounds so much less threatening. And softening the whole term biotechnology sounds, that doesn't sound too bad, but genetic engineering is okay, by genetic engineering we're actually introducing foreign genes and we're crossing the species boundary and we are playing God. Like it or not, there's no two ways about this, that we are actually interfering in the natural circumstance of things and we are eating foods that have antibiotic genes, that have bacterial genes, that have artificial genes. And let's use a scientific model that the New York Times published a very interesting article earlier this year and was halting the team, there has been a lot of exposition on it for quite a while, that the entire science behind genetic engineering is based on fundamentally flawed issues. For instance, that one gene creates one disease, or you know, that we're going to find a gene for cystic fibrosis or... But it's much more complicated because genes express proteins and proteins interact with each other. And we might not be talking about, we're talking about the genome, the human genome. We thought that originally the human genome, we thought that we were going to have about, I think it was 70,000 genes that we were going to have. Then it was down to 75,000 and now we're down to 25,000. There's some fish that have got more genes than us. And this is the knowledge that has changed in the last 20 years, in the last 5 years, since 2000. Knowledge has changed. So what we are actually doing is we are already playing in the dark with this knowledge on the witch here, and it's rather worrying that as we learn more, it might not actually be the genome that we're talking about, but these genes create hundreds of proteins. Sometimes one gene can create hundreds of types of proteins, and these proteins all interact. So your degrees of complexity go far deeper. Mm. And the scientists will agree with me on this. When you've got hundreds of proteins interacting, not just the genes interacting, but hundreds of proteins interacting, the complexity is beyond computation. And we simply don't know that. This is why we say genetic engineering is far more complex and far more worrying because it is based on a scientific model that is flawed, it's old, it's out of date. We have no problem with biotechnology. There are many means of biotechnology that we can use, and we do use every day to improve our lives. And modern biotechnology in many ways is also has offered us some wonderful opportunities. I'm not anti-technology, but we need to follow the precautionary principle and take a precautionary approach. And as said earlier that the issue of the precautionary approach is if you're going to do it, you take the responsibility to check it all out. Now we haven't even had multi-generational testing on rats by the applicants in anything. We have seen coming out of Russia now, Russia that is now demanding labelling of all of its genetically modified foods. We are seeing studies coming out of there, multi-generational studies, where baby mice die because the ones that are eating genetically modified food as opposed to the control. These are scientific experiments. So we need better science. There was one other question. Oh yes, the farmers have been concerned about genetic engineering and Sasaki has discussed this for a while, and we have had communications with them. And I believe that they've heard both sides of the debate. They've had the PowerPoint presentation from industry. We have spoken to them very briefly. We haven't had a lot of interaction with them, but many of the comrades who work with us in many of our organizations have spoken through their network. So, yes, there is a lot of concern about the loss of jobs in the industry. We ask why farmers are taking these seeds up time and time again. In Brazil, we're seeing these massive soy plantations with 1,000 hectares of great city work. Now, is this what we want? Or do we want to have concentrated food? Monocultures have been shown to produce far lower
yield per hectare than concentrated organic, be it organic or be it modern intensive agriculture. The smaller the farm, the higher the yield. And we need to look at this. I feel that in South Africa we've been deeply misinformed, we've gone down the high tech route, and we haven't looked at all of the alternatives and given them proper emphasis. So, Honourable Chair, we need to look at all of the alternatives. Look at the health implications for our people and the food security for us. This is a real issue. As I say, many of our members come from the faith-based group. I know that Bishop Jeff Davies was going to present there, he was on the list. I don't see him here, I don't think he's still going to present, but he could give a good sort of surrounding on moral issues, which are of concern. Have I covered all of the points?
Just the country. I mean,
the country, yes. Yes. I think, you know, it's very interesting. South Africa has really embraced genetic engineering quite alarmingly. Yet all of our neighbours to the north, Zimbabwe, Zambia, Botswana to a limited amount, Namibia, most of the other SADC countries have taken a far more proportionary approach than South Africa. I've presented papers in Zambia, spoken to the ministers, the scientists, and all of the rest, there's a far more open and inclusive dialogue, including the media and press, in Zambia than there has been here. Industry has held sway in this country. So I would say we could look north to some of the SADC nations. They have got technology from Norway. I know that Zambia has got technology from Norway to test everything. They're very good worried to see. If there is no biosafety protocol and monitoring within the country, the genetically engineered seeds are introduced into the country inadvertently in aid or trade, people inevitably take those seeds and they will plant them if they are food aid. Some of those seeds will be saved and planted. Now, if they then breed up with the traditional varieties that people are growing, eventually Monsanto or whoever who has a patent on that seed can turn around, as they do in the United States, can turn around and say, we own the patent to that seed. And they can potentially own the entire seed crop of Zambia or wherever, and with severe implications for the future security. So, biosafety crosses a whole lot of boundaries. And I would say issues like countries like New Zealand had a fairly open approach, although they have also been lobbied very strongly by industry. The United Kingdom had a good approach. Again, industry is immensely powerful. And the same people who have public PR companies who represented the tobacco industry, who represented big oil, and have muddied the waters on those two issues for decades, really. Represent the GM industry. So there are very powerful players in play here, and we need to look at that as well. As I said, we trade age, all we want is food security for our people and safe food for our people. Safe age, we want to have safe food and safe good food for our people. We've been growing GM crops for 10 years. 10 years, 40% of people going to bed hungry. Today, 40% of people going to bed hungry. What's changed? Yield hasn't increased. We haven't seen any remarkable innovations in yield increase. Yet we've seen remarkable increases in the amount of pesticides that are related to these herbicide-resistant crops. In Argentina, we've seen an increase of over 100-fold of the pesticide that is related to the genetically modified crops. So, as I say, Monsanto is now the world's biggest seed company, but it was a chemical company. We want to get that. So, it's big business. We need to look at food security for our people first and foremost, so I'm going to say that. And look after the environment and the health of us.
I'm
with that, I would like to thank everyone for listening. Remember, tomorrow we're going to be going to the morning for the so we'll all meet here at Parliament at 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock. I'll sleep here.
I'm going to go to the hospital.